Hi, and welcome to episode 53 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. I'm your host, Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mass from Mars and Stalkerville, and joining me to step through the dimensional portal of independent comics this week are writer, artist, and creator of the kick-ass superhero webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the cherry on top of our iced bun, it's Tony Esmond.
Hey! Good episode last week, guys, without me. Fucking vast improvement, obviously.
Cheers, Tony.
You're very much missed. You were much missed, yes.
I know it's not as much bad or rude words we used, which I was quite impressed with.
I know. It's amazing how, like, we become an all-ages podcast when you're not on it.
I'm going to rectify that this week.
Here we go. Strap in, folks.
I said Daniel kind of set the tone, and we just kind of didn't.
Yeah.
I think he's been the consummate professional. He's been on so many podcasts that he knows the kind of the rules. Don't swear.
Okay. Cool. There you go. No, very good interview. Was he's a nice guy as well. I was very impressed with him. Yeah.
Really nice guy. Yeah.
And, dude. I must say, it's wonderful to have both Dan and Tony back. Isn't it wonderful, yeah, everyone?
This is in a script. He's reading this out.
No, that's actually not on my script.
Oh, okay.
I've just got a note that says say something horrible about them, but I've chosen to ignore that bit. Yes, the boys are back in town. Are you just going to leave me hanging? Yes, we've got our guests locked up in the basement, and so we might as well introduce them, haven't we?
Let's get back on Fritzel. I didn't drop that joke. That was Vinny before the show.
look.
Oh, Vinny.
Look,
I'm going to call you Vinny this week.
No one. Oh, God. I go by many names. Anyone listening to this show will know that because they've called me it probably. But anyway, our guest, let's let him out of the box. This week, our guest is someone who's produced some great titles, such as Martillo, Devil Smiter. He's worked on Spectre Show, and there's a personal favourite of this show's, the awesome sci-fi series, Shaman Kane. It's David Broughton. Welcome to the show, David.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
Good, man.
All the better
time
for seeing you.
For this. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been in the work. We've wanted to talk to you for quite some time, which sounds quite creepy now that I've said it out loud.
Not at all, Vince. I've listened to the show before, mate. I know what you're all about.
You know, creepy.
It's lawyer.
Yeah, I know. I can't say anything anymore. You know, I'll go anywhere and I just get abused, in the best kind of way. And I'm sure David will be the same as everyone else. He's with us for the whole show. All right, don't start on me now, son. All right, we got a whole show to get through yet.
Becoming Vinny is the nasty character. Vinny is coming out.
David's with us for the whole show, and we'll be finding out more about his book's influences and why he isn't working on 2000 AD already. Come on, 2000 AD, let's make it happen. Yep. He's a shoo-in for it. Anyone who's seen his work will agree. But before all that glorious waffle, Tony's back, Dan's back. Surely there's something going on in the world of comics that we should talk about.
Is that it?
I
was going to mention the old fucking bullshit rip-off pictures that we've been kind of ranting about.
Yeah. Before you do, strap in, everyone, because we're going to get heated.
Well, a lot of people mention that they see this kind of stuff at cons and shows all the time, and you probably realise what I'm talking about as soon as I mention this. Essentially, someone's downloaded a picture off the net, or maybe grabbed a high-res version of Deadpool, and then they've run it through some kind of filter or action on Photoshop to add some kind of paint spray effect, and then they're flogging it on for cheaper money to punters. It's such a wealth of it.
It just seems, I mean, I looked at the, I think the three that I looked at was Han Solo, and it was actually the image that appears on Han Solo's Wikipedia page. Mm. It was Deadpool, which was the second image that comes up if you Google Deadpool.
Yeah.
And what was the other one? What's that character, the bounty hunter in Star Wars?
Boba Fett.
And it was like, definitely within the top 10 images that comes up if you Google Boba Fett, wasn't it, I think? But you had a conversation with the guy, didn't you?
I tried to kind of initiate a conversation with him. Maybe someone was asking how they'd commissioned them, to do something, and I said, well, I'll just download the picture off the net and send it to them. It'll save them time doing it themselves. maybe not the best fit to get forward from. And then they sent me a message basically saying, look, I do all this myself. If you can find some, yeah, he said, if you can find the image that allegedly I've copied, I'll take it down, which is just absolutely ridiculous. He's saying, if you can find the image that I've copied, tell me and I'll take it down so you can't go any further with it.
Competition to find it. Whereupon, having seized upon that, because you sent me that message, and no one puts Dan in the corner, so we went all out on him, didn't we?
Yeah. You know
what I
mean?
I found the first three images that he put up and sent them to him immediately, and then he blocked me on his Facebook page.
Yeah, I got blocked. I mean, as soon as he sent that message to me, he blocked me as well.
Yeah.
Didn't want him to come back.
Yeah.
I was kind of like only sort of slightly on social media this week. This all happened without me knowing it. See, my compatriots in the awesome podcast are creating all this havoc in the world. They're fighting the good fight.
Justice.
They're fighting for justice. Yeah, you're like fathers for justice.
Not really.
No. I think this kind of thing should be on the people running, whoever do the run the cons, that they should be on this. It should be like they send the email around and say, don't be fucking selling this shit. And then.
Yeah. And there was allegedly a caveat in the MCM email, wasn't there, about that, I think?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, I'm not talking about someone drawing a fucking picture of Cyclops and selling it. I'm sort of talking about someone right click saving off the fucking net and then running it through a filter.
At Cardiff, I was sat next to Gab Mitchell and Emily Owen, and within our eye view, there was a huge table. We're talking like two or three tables worth with all of this stuff, similar kind of stuff. I don't know how do you screen it? Like I think maybe on a smaller con level it might be easier, but it's quite a hectic thing to organise a con anyway, isn't it?
Do you know, it's sad as well, because they don't half do some business, some of these people.
They do a lot of business. They sell these things. You can buy amazing original prints or, like, you know, original sketches of characters you love and stuff from so many independent artists that are at cons. I urge everyone, do that rather than just get some A3 mass-produced print.
It just looks tacky, doesn't it, as well? Yeah. It's just, that's clearly what it is. It just looks...
What's weird is that...
original about it, you know.
Some people wouldn't think of having a picture of Deadpool up on their wall, but if it's on a bit of canvas with kind of like some paint spray, suddenly it's worthy of being put on the wall. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of a strange thing going on
there. Yeah, it is weird. It's like it's the version of Man at Athena, which probably people of only mine and David's age will know. Do you remember Athena, Dave?
I do. The tennis player posters are one of
them. Yeah, it's equivalent of people who had a monkey sitting on the toilet in their toilet. You know what I mean?
Going back to what you were saying about the prints and conventions and that, I sort of noticed that these people are doing a lot of good business as well. And obviously they're ripping off other people's IP. And I thought to myself, well, wouldn't it be nice? You know, I suddenly thought, well, it's a shame that they're getting the business and then us that are producing the comics, you know, and spending all the time there are basically having to work really, really hard to try and get these people to come over and have a look at our stuff, you know, because we're not actually doing anything from the films.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, well, I did Lawgiver earlier this year, and I thought, well, as I've done a couple of times, I do sketches and things, and I thought, well, one way that I can sort of like hopefully generate a bit of interest, point of sale interest, is obviously because all the people going to Lawgiver are interested in Judge Dredd, was to do my sketches and then have free sketches selling with the comic books, you know. And also doing sketches. And then, obviously, as you've got with Captain Britain, Tony, colour prints. And basically, again, I'm not selling them, so I'm giving them away free to anybody that buys my comic. I just thought, well, hey, why not do that? You know, it's extra effort on my behalf. But obviously, if you've got fans of a particular genre there, whether it be Marvel, DC, or you know, like Rebellion 2000 AD, then I thought, well, until I'm told that it's a copyright infringement, you know, I can't see any problem with doing that. And I think actually, win. I think it's just educating the people at the conventions, though.
Yeah. You're essentially at a Lawgiver convention, aren't you? So do people not, you know, they don't expect you just to be drawing your own sort of create your own stuff either, do they? Especially not there, for God's sake. You know, I think that's fine. I can't see a problem with that. I'd much rather have a sketch, and that's the most generous thing in the world. You're giving away a sketch with a £3.50 comic book, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know, you go to the bigger shows and, you know, a lot of pro artists, they make a bit of money off doing original commissions and original sketches. So these things aren't an issue. I mean, for me personally, I don't, you know, these things are brilliant.
No, I love it.
I love it. Yeah, I'm the same as you. That's brilliant. It's these mass-produced people that don't seem to, I don't want to say care, but it's just done purely for profit.
It's the mercenary kind of tactics of it, of kind of just...
Yeah,
I would agree with all that. And I think also, I mean, I've done a few conventions this year as well. They've all been absolutely brilliantly run. So I've got no complaints about that at all. But sometimes as well, you can see that the type of people going to it might be family orientated, in which case they're only going to be after particular sort of stuff, you know, the big two from the films for the kids.
Yeah.
Which means that the adults that actually have the buying power are limited to what they can buy. And they might not be interested in the independent comic market because obviously it wouldn't come first. So, I mean, some of the bigger events, you know, that happens. So you have to tailor and try and sort of, you know, bring them in somehow. And that's, you know, maybe show, you know, do what I was doing, which is sketching and prints, but give them away free with the comic. And maybe you might get those sales.
Couldn't you do like a judge, a personalised judge drawing for everyone and basically just have a template, have like a blank chin? And then you just draw the person's chin and then you write their name image on the blank bit of the badge.
Yeah.
There you go. Portrait as a judge.
That would be really good, wouldn't it?
They'd only go, I want a Brit judge. That's what they do, wouldn't they? Yeah, yeah.
I'm surprised there isn't some sort of phone app that you can do that. That would be a brilliant phone app, wouldn't it? Like face swap.
It's like when you could be a zombie and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. I'd rather be a judge.
Years ago, I used to work for a well-known photo booth company in Bookham, and I used to work in their marketing department, and I was in charge of actually doing... You ever seen those photographs? They can take pictures of you and superimpose them on images, on the background. Well, I actually used to be in charge on the British side of actually doing those. I mean, we did Warner Brothers and stuff like that. And again, you know, being an American company, they were really hard on how things looked and getting the right colours. Which was different because of the processing of the machines at the time. I actually did actually try and sort of like sell it to my bosses to do a Judge Dredd type one and try and talk to Rebecca, to them, IPC, I think it was at the time.
Yeah.
So that would have been really good. You know, they would have, at the time in the 90s, they would have had them around the corner and down the block to take pictures of it. So.
Yeah. It was the 90s equivalent of those things you put your face through at the seaside, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think this particular sort of subject or person that we're... Well, not person, you know, these people that are doing this. I think the thing that sort of saddens me most is how upset it's getting a lot of people.
Yeah.
I don't like people being upset, you know me.
Well, I think the problem for me, and we talked about this earlier, was the fact that they're ripping people off.
Yeah.
They're taking pictures that apparently are similar to just cutting pieces out of a magazine and sellotaping them on a bit of paper and selling them. It's that equivalent, you know?
Yeah.
It's costing them virtually nothing to do, and they're charging the public a lot of money for what they think is an original piece.
That's what fucks me off.
Yeah.
Give it a couple of years. If you went to the... If this person was at a convention this year, give it a couple of years, and that person probably won't be at the convention anymore, but those small press people that were there for the past 2 years will still be there. I mean, that's...
The other person would be on their yacht.
They'll be in their little Breaking Bad room, you know, with a bed made of money. And that sort of thing. Yeah. And we'll be going, I sold 10 comics this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the eternal struggle. The eternal struggle.
Phone ringing from the bank manager. I said, oh, ignore it.
Anyway, to end that story, they took all those images down and they unblocked me from their Facebook page, which is a bit of a strange one.
Hmm.
So
presumably they had nothing on their website then, because the majority of it was fucking copy stuff.
Does that mean that you're going to be our man on the inside, Tony?
What do you mean? Oh no!
Well, if you're unblocked, no, it's not dodgy. If you're unblocked, does that mean like you can see what's going on now?
He probably sees me as the friendly face of the podcast, as a lot of people do.
Yeah,
I think that was the best dramatic pause. I think
I'll let that quiet. Just last.
I mean, but by far they're not alone in that one place. Right. There's loads of them doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, not to be mean, when I went to Melksham last time and there was a chap sitting on one of the tables and he had production stills from films and he had just basically run them through an Illustrator, like, filter to kind of get, like, a kind of harshly drawn kind of effect in a sort of, you're sitting amongst a bunch of artists that use these programs 24/7. It's so obvious what you're doing. I mean, it's just like the elephant in the room, really.
Yeah, we'll see if he's back there this year.
Yeah. I doubt it.
Yeah.
But I will be there. Anyway, let's bring the mood up. You know.
Yeah, okay.
Let's put on some soulful jazz. Is there anything else before we get onto the reviews?
We really are the equivalent of the Mighty Boosh, aren't we? It's going that way, isn't it?
Cheek bun.
That's why I don't like cricket.
You are literally our old Greg. Oh, I tell you what, I should have saved that.
Who's
for one
the
of
gorilla?
My intros.
I like him best. What's the gorilla's name?
What's his name? Dan, come on. What's the gorilla's name
I
in the Mighty Boosh?
Can't fucking think.
He DJs down the roller disco, and so do I. Bolo the gorilla.
Bolo, yeah. Tony's our Bolo.
Thank you.
I imagine American listeners thinking, "What the fuck are they talking?"
Oh, they know about the Mighty Boosh.
They need to get on board the Boosh.
The Boosh train.
Yeah.
Right. Before we get completely,
have you ever seen the stage version of that? Just quickly.
Yes.
Have you got the DVD of it? There's one outtake, and it's just one of them shouting in the audience, "Oh, are you some kind of?" And then he uses that word that you keep bleeping out. And that's the whole of the outtakes on the DVD. I thought, that is class.
Yeah. Like, it is us, isn't it? That sounds like something we do. Anyway, comics.
We might be doing a live soon. We might be on the stage live soon. So
yeah.
Dancing for money. No, right. does anyone want to talk about some comics?
I'll pay money to see that.
What?
We got that stuff for you.
Yeah.
Can it be unseen?
Anyway, I bet it'd be nice to you lot because
that's an interview. It's going to get dirty, my friend.
Yeah. Oh dear. Anyway, comics, Tony.
Okay. Right. I've. Do you notice how I didn't do it this week? Did I? Did you see that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I noticed.
I cried proudly with tears last week, Dan. Thank you, mate.
I discussed it beforehand, and when I deployed it, Vince was caught completely unawares.
We're talking about a catchphrase, nothing, no body yeah. part. Let's just put it that way.
Okay, this week, bearing in mind I missed the week, which had in the little bit in the background to it as a little bit of a turmoil in New Europe that we're not going to talk about because we're a positive podcast. So I thought what I would do is I would talk about a European comic that I liked and that you can easily buy in a translated version over here. So what I've done is I've looked at the books of Leo. Does anyone know who he is? Anyone come across his stuff?
No.
No.
Leo, a.k.a., look, this is why I look things up on Wikipedia, Luiz Eduardo Oliveira is a Brazilian comics creator who worked initially as an illustrator in the 1970s in Sao Paulo before moving to France in the early 80s. He had some sort of successful collaborations in France. So there was a magazine, I think, a strip called Rodolphe. And then in 1993, Dagard, which is a publishing company, agreed to publish his first sci-fi series, which is called Aldebaran, which is a sort of alien world story. It continued into two other books, Beetlejuice and Antares, and it was nominated at Angoulême in 2004 for Best Series. And this, what I'm going to talk about today, is The Survivors, which is the newest series. It's essentially a prequel, and we'll get onto this. It's kind of a prequel to the three series that came out previously to it, all about sort of surviving on a strange alien world. There's essentially stories of very regular humans who are dumped into inhospitable and sort of alien worlds and forests and seas. And the worlds are full of what are easily some of the weirdest designed creatures you'll ever see in the pages of a comic book, but also very beautifully designed. Have any of you seen these books at all?
Only from what you sent over, the little clips.
Right, yeah, absolutely. I was reading it on holiday, wasn't I? And I sent you some pictures of it. And it's just so beautiful. They're just so incredibly, so really detailed and, you know, really well rendered. And what it is a group of very young, sort of, I suppose, 12 to about 20-odd, they get dumped on a planet and they have to sort of fight to survive. And they sort of keep coming across different strange creatures that are sort of both sort of strangely beautiful but very sort of wild and ferocious. The worlds have a sort of, especially this one, has a sort of strange logic to it. There's sort of how do you survive, and there's almost a trick to surviving as you sort of work through it. It's almost like a jigsaw puzzle that you put together. It's got a sort of really mysterious underlying element to it, a sort of logic that almost seems just out of reach to these characters as they sort of wander through the world. The designs will really blow your mind. The real highlight for me for the book is when I reach a new design of a creature and you're like, honestly, that is just incredible. What he does, though, he doesn't treat them as sort of mysterious shapes under the water, or, you know, as you get these sort of cliches in book comics, don't you, sort of fangs and teeth shining in the darkness or anything like that. What he does is he just opens up full light, full daytime, just springs the creature on you. You know, just you turn the page and there it is, sort of beautifully bright and coloured and standing there. And they've all got a sort of specific reason. You can see why they're shaped or why they walk. Some are insects and some are lizards and some are sort of primates and all this sort of thing. They've all got a sort of, they all look beautiful, but they've got a sort of sting or a bite that's going to come back and get you as well, you know. And in that sort of don't mess with nature, nature will find a way kind of thing. It'll always win in the end, you know. I'll say this, Leo, he's great with designs. Where he does suffer a little bit is the sort of stiffness and awkwardness of the characters. I don't think, from a sort of writing perspective, he's the best. They're very sort of... you find this with some French comics. They're very melodramatic and very sort of suddenly reactionary, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of the dialogue is also... It's sort of... They seem to explain fucking everything they do. You know, we're going to walk through the woods, and we're going to walk through the woods. This is us walking through the woods. It's almost like that all the time.
You know what I mean? I love that narration, Tony.
Yeah, thank you. But once you get past that, you realise that there's a real sort of genuine depth to it. But I think it's the stiffness of the characters and the sort of this sort of weird storytelling that when you see a creature, it really surprises you, because I'm 100% certain they're not done in Poser, the drawings in this, but they've almost got that sort of slight stiffness to, you know, you see people who draw using Poser and you can tell, can't you, you know, most of the time. It's almost a little bit like, because this was done in the, you know, the 80s and early 90s, so a lot of it was, so I'm sure they didn't have that then, but you can tell there's a little bit of that stiffness. So when you're sort of presented with this huge sort of creature's head that comes out of the ocean at you or something like that, you know, it's a real shock to you. His storytelling is fucking completely all over the place as well. It's just darts about here and there, and I'm sure these books must take a sort of year to finish. You know the way the sort of European model is, you put an album, what they call it, an album, don't they, out every year, yeah. a big sort of 48 page book, and I'm sure he must just get bored and he just sort of throws things in there just to fuck everything up sometimes. there's a moment in it where there's a couple of the characters and they're wandering across the sort of barren countryside, and it starts raining, this is a little bit of a spoiler for anyone who might read it, but they walk into the rain and come out the other side, and they suddenly discover they're in the future. And it's all, I'm like reading it, I'm thinking, what the fuck happened there? You know, just bored with telling a story. So he thinks, I'll just throw them into the future because they walked into this rain. You know,
it's an independent, did you say, Tony?
Sorry, mate.
Did you say, is this an independent comic?
It's put out by Cinebook. It's obviously a very popular French book, but Cinebook, who put out a lot of European stuff over here, are quite a small sort of operator over here, but they've started putting it out. They put the first three volumes out. The third volume is called Quantum Anomalies, so you can guess what that's about. It's genuinely like a whole sort of genre to its own. It's like, it's not sort of survivalist. It's not sort of post-apocalyptic. It's alien planets, and he just seems to be obsessed with this whole living in a like a really rough environment, and then throwing, you know, humans sort of struggling to survive in a hot environment, and then just throwing creatures at them. But there's also this sort of underlying political thing going on about, you know, environmentalism and stuff like, and the planet taking it back, and you're not knowing what's going to be thrown at you. It's 48 pages. I bought one on because I got bored on holiday and ran out of things to read, so rather than sort of wrestle the local people, I ended up buying some on the digital app Izneo, which is Izneo, which is a really good app that has loads and loads of French language comics on it. But if you put British into the search engine, it brings up all the comics that are translations. Oh, so brilliant. You can actually read. Yeah, really good. I think if you bought this as a hard copy in a shop, it would be $6.99. But I was, if you bought it on the Isneo app, currently with the exchange rate, it was coming in at $4.50. Really, really, absolutely beautiful. Some of the most beautiful comics I've read in a long time. I know I put the pictures up on Facebook and it got an awful lot of hits, and I can see why. It's slight warning, it's at moments very sexual. He seems to sort of throw relationships in and out of the continuity. So he'll sleep with this woman, then she'll sleep with someone else, and it sort of flip flops about like that. And there's a couple of pages that are, I'm going to say, a little bit there for titillation, but I'm down with that. Okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can feel that. He's put out some other books. So you've got the four books: Aldebrand, Beetlejuice, and Antares, and then you've got the three Survivors books. I'm not sure if they've advertised when they're putting out the fourth volume of the Survivors, but you can, if being a bit sneaky like me, you can download the fourth volume in French, the first, I think, 10 pages for free from Isneo. And if you're wondering about, there's a big it's a big cliffhanger at the end of the third volume, and I thought, oh, I can't leave it till they decide they're going to publish this in English, you know. So I used my schoolboy French and read the first sort of 10 pages on the Isneo app, and it does tell you what happens. So if you're getting that desperate to see what happens, then you can do that. He's also done a couple of other books, Namibia and Kenya, which just sound like sort of exploration books of Africa, you know. And in many ways they are, but they'll be exploring Kenya, and suddenly they come across a dinosaur. You know, it's like that. It's
okay.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, it's well worth looking at. You can go to Cinebook. I think it's cinebook.com. Cinebook.co.uk on the web, and you can buy their stuff there. You can go to the Isneo, Izneo app, or you can go to @Cinebook Limited on Twitter and find their stuff. They've got absolutely loads of stuff. They put out the book we talked about a couple of weeks ago, 13. They've got loads and loads of great translated books, so go and have a look at them. And they're not expensive, they're quite cheap, actually, for what they are, you know.
Nice one.
There you go. That's my one, dude.
Awesome. Yeah. Dan Butcher, how do you follow that?
I try my best.
I believe in you. I believe in you.
Thank you.
We do.
There's I usually, like, when I come across stuff on Twitter and people are kind of like selling their book, I check out the comic, like, hashtag or webcomics. And this one popped up. It's called Wasteland Paradise, with the undertitle of The Three Juices, Volume 1, by WP Comics.
The Three Juices?
Yeah.
Oh.
Orange.
I was thinking that's an alternative name for this show.
So we got it's written by Mark Fluharty and illustrated by Wayne Hill. I think it's definitely a British comic. It's 38 pages, and you can buy a print copy for $5.95, and a PDF version, I think it's only a few quid. And you can get that from their site, which is wpcomicslimited.com.
Cool.
And so when I saw the tweet come up, it had the illustration of the front cover, and I thought, I've got to get this, because it's a picture of you got Wasteland Paradise in the top as the headline, as the logo, and then as a guy being crucified in front of like a vista of kind of like a ruined city, and like there's a polluted sky, and there's these thugs drinking in front of him, one of them shooting him in the foot. I was like, yeah, this, all right, let's get this.
All been there.
Yeah, and that sort of sets the tone. I mean, if you see that cover, it's like, right, that's what you're going to get in the book. And the little blurb is, in this world, the moment you begin to think you are safe, you end up dead or being eaten by something or someone worse. Welcome to Wasteland Paradise. When you get into the story from there, it doesn't tell you anything. There's no kind of backstory or any kind of blurb to kind of help the reader. And it's one of the things I mentioned later on in the review. So it's kind of post-apocalyptic world, and you're joined, like, two characters are kind of going along through the wilderness. One's been hired by the other to kind of clear out this plane of, like, these huge monstrous spiders. And it seems like animals and insects have undergone some kind of weird mutation, and they're now enormous for some reason. It doesn't tell me why. And as the night falls, like, the two of them take refuge inside the airplane, and then these raiders come along, and then the spiders start coming along, and there's this huge great big battle. It's really, really brutal. I mean, at times the artwork kind of it's rough in places, but the artist definitely shows signs of real promise. It's like when you look back at kind of earlier person's work and their career's gone on to be something big, you can see like little gems. I think that looks really good. He's really got something there.
I have that sometimes, like when you see certain artists on Twitter, they say, like, I found a sketch I did in 2005, and you see what they're doing now, and you just think, there's hope for me yet.
Yeah. But something like this, you'll see like a page and you think, this page is really well done, and then like one panel might be really kind of like that, really lets it down. It's not in the quality of the others. It's the same with the writing. I have to say the writing's really good. It's kind of really nice moments of dialogue between the two, and the characters don't have a lot of speech, but what they do is kind of, it builds up the character quite well. I would suggest that the team making this comic need to step back a little bit, maybe look at what other people are doing, because for this comic, I literally have no idea what's going on. Like, I don't know what year it is. I don't know if this is Earth. I don't know if that's intentional that they're not telling you this, but I don't get any feel for the world or anything that's going on. It's kind of like watching Star Wars, right, about the kind of the blurb at the beginning. I'd be like, what's going on there? I'd kind of, and there's not enough in the story to kind of let me know what is going on.
Do you think, because like there are some stories that just drop you in the middle of the action and they're easy to pick up, you know?
Yeah. This, where they kind of refer to kind of things that have happened before, but like the reader would know. You know, it's written like the writer knows this world inside out, and he's writing the story, and it makes sense to him. But when someone who doesn't know anything about this has read it, I'm a bit confused, right, if I'm honest, about what's going on and who's doing what, and what the justification is for saying. Because it's obvious that this society has gone under massive change, but I don't know what they are.
It's kind of the fear of all creators, that they're doing something that nobody's understanding apart from them, but this is sort of turned up to 11 from the sound
of
things.
Sort of, yeah. Well, kind of, you, like you say, you know your world, and you've got to kind of communicate that and the story to the audience. Yeah. And in this, they've not done enough. As just like almost like a presumption of the audience knows what's going on straight away. And I was like, I have no idea. But yeah, you just kind of just need to work on that a bit more. That's all I'd say.
Right.
Kind of.
It's a great premise, you know. I like a bit of action, obviously. So it sounds good.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of got like a almost like a Wild West feel, where kind of everything's kind of taken a step back, but it's in the future, and there's kind of elements that are, like I say, overgrown. The insects and animals going crazy.
Well, that's always cool.
Yeah, and like it's kind of Mad Max style with people running around like with hockey pads on and stuff. So it's got all the right elements in there. I just feel like the storytelling and the approach needs a little bit of tweaking.
Yeah. Okay. Once or possibly, you think? Or
yeah, definitely. I mean, there are more comics from WP Comics on their site. I think they've got two or three titles at the moment, and there's more coming. So it's a great start, but I just feel like you need to kind of just take a look at stuff and work on that kind of connection and storytelling to just key the readers in a little more.
See how it develops as it goes on, kind of thing.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's me.
Nice. Well, I've, on the opposite scale of that, I've got an issue that set up the world sort of brilliantly.
Brilliant.
Yes. I had another choice picked out for this week, and I was all ready to talk about it, and then this book, a little scan over Comixology, picked it up, and it blew my brains out, basically.
Is this the one you sent us a picture of?
This is Hillbilly by Eric Powell.
Yes.
I read this today.
Yes. Good. Yes. Published by Albatross Comics, which I'm pretty certain that's like Powell's name for self-publishing stuff that he started doing now.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I think so. It looks like that kind of thing, because it isn't like from a big sort of company. Now, just to set it up for you all, it's the story of a wandering loner named Rondell, who literally wanders a strange mountainous land, hunting down witches, goblins, and creepy things, alongside a giant talking bear called Lucille. As you do. You know, fairly standard, isn't it? Slice of life comic, that. But this was brilliant. It's an amazing beginning issue that like it sets up this character, because it is like one main character. It sets up that new character and the world they live in like brilliantly. I knew nothing about this series It was literally, you know, they say never judge a book by its cover, but that's bollocks. Because sometimes you can tell, yeah. You know, and if you've got especially if you've got the artist doing the cover and the interiors, and Eric Powell does that kind of stuff, you kind of know what you're going to get. And I was sold on the fantastic front cover alone, which is poster worthy. I think that
it is definitely.
Now, anyone who doesn't know Eric Powell, he's the creator of The Goon, of course. I've got a couple of those books. I've never read a lot of The Goon. But I like
The Goon. Yeah, I liked it. It got a little bit bitter towards the end. He had that famous rant, didn't he, about the comics industry?
Yeah.
In one, and I hadn't read it from around about that time onwards. But certainly the Chinatown stuff he did, and
I'm not familiar with that. What was the rant regarding? Just how it's run?
I think so. Yeah. To be fair, I didn't read that issue. I'd heard about it and sort of jumped off it. But
fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to know, isn't it? If you don't have all the sides. But I know Eric Powell's been someone that's been slogging away, sort of like on the fringes, like for a long time.
He's done some mainstream stuff, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Didn't he do some stuff for DC? Didn't he do a Solomon Grundy thing for them?
I think so.
And this is a continuation. This includes characters from The Goon, though, doesn't it?
Does it?
There's a hint at the end where the buzzard's in it, and the buzzard is a character from The Goon.
Ah, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
there you go. But if you don't know anything, it says it all. If you don't know anything about The Goon, you don't need to. But Eric Powell's work in itself, I mean, you know, never mind like what he's like personally, his work's always been just so striking and eye-catching. You know, he's a master. He's really developed, like the pencils and just everything in this book. Especially, it's not inks and stuff. It's like watercolors and line work.
He seemed to turn that corner at one point when I think Dark Horse he was with. I think The Goon was it.
Yeah,
he went pretty much a monthly format with The Goon there, and it took a bit. It changed a lot his style. He was putting less panels on a page, but it was much more sort of painterly.
Yeah.
I think he was taking such a long time to do an issue that he thought, right, I'm going to change my style to make it almost quicker. Yeah. And I think in that he made it.
It lost
less sort of line work. Yeah. No, I actually prefer it. I think it reads better and it's given more space to breathe, I think. And then he continues that most of this issue, but some of it, there's quite a lot of dialogue in some of the origin bits, aren't there?
Yeah, because this one is like there is an origin that's told in this, but in a wonderful way. His sense of character design is like brilliant, I think. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, and like, you know, he's got such a stylized look to his characters, and he loves drawing like trolls and goblins, you know, all those sort of icky kind of weird supernatural characters. Like something like if the Brothers Grimm wrote a pulp comic, do you know what I mean? It's that kind of sort of style he's got. And the main character in this, he just an awesome look for the main guy. I think
best weapon as well.
The weapon of choice, which is a huge meat cleaver that comes from the very kitchen of the devil himself.
Yeah,
that's literally his weapon that he uses to dispatch bad guys, and boy does he use it well.
A huge thing, and it's got like a really weird handle to it, like a sword handle.
The blade is huge and slightly curved. You know, it looks like something you pick up as in an RPG video game. Do you know what I mean? It's like a huge sort of weapon like that. Now, I won't spoil the initial story that happens in this issue because I think you should all read it for yourself. But suffice to say that when you learn, you actually learn everything you need to know about this main hero in this sort of story. But it's told in like a brilliant way, like a different way that I thought, you know, because he is, there's two people sort of telling stories to each other, and he tells one, which is clearly his sort of origin story in a way.
Yeah.
It's just really beautifully well done. For essentially things that are like a flashback or a storytelling premise, he's done it really well. One of my favourite details was in the way this story dealt with Rondell's eyes, which I think it's a totally macabre detail. And I won't spoil it. You have to read to see it for yourself. But I don't know about you, Tony, but I thought that was pretty awesome.
Yeah. I like the way at the end the bear said something about, oh, why didn't you tell him about me? And he says, well, I can't tell him the whole truth, can I?
Yeah.
Does that really freak him out?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Because you don't see the bear until the end. And the bear is a beast. An absolute beast. So I think it's obvious. This book sort of blew me away. It was $2.50 on Comixology. Now, I know we've discussed the price of digital comics and issues before, and I've certainly been stung by not getting my money's worth a couple of times. Mainly, a lot of the time, it is with a big two book. You know, for instance, you know, the prices can be a lot for what you get. But this one just struck me, so I took a punt on it, and I'm glad I did, because I can't wait to see the next issue. I'm hoping he's done a lot of this well within time, and, you know, so we'll get a fairly regular release date.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it came out last Wednesday in hard copy. That's where I got it from. I got it an issue.
Oh, what's it look like on the page? Because I read it on Comixology's Guided View, which was a brilliant way to read it.
Yeah, there's a couple of pages, I think, which I'm going to say are slightly overwritten. Yeah. There's an awful lot of exposition in it and dialogue.
That's very interesting, because when I sort of read it in the Guided View narrative, obviously it's breaking it down panel by panel. So it really helps the rhythm. You know, when you do that, you're not seeing, you look at it on a whole page and it looks like a lot of words, but when you do panel by panel, it's got a nice rhythm to it.
Yeah, I don't want to be that guy who says, I looked at a page and there's a lot of words and it put me off, because like, we all read novels and stuff, don't we? Yeah. So, which is just words.
Yeah.
But sometimes it sort of, it does seem like it's too much exposition and it doesn't allow enough art for me. Mm. And he uses a sort of style that shows that it's a bit of a, don't want to give it away, but it's like a callback to me. He's got a sort of certain style to it.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Shows it's you know. Yeah.
I mean, it's beautiful artwork in this, you know, when you see it, like, at its finest. I mean, the style is like Dave Wachter, if you like Dave Wachter sort of work, that sort of watercolory sort of pencils, rather than, like, heavy inks and things like that. If you're interested for seeing it for yourself, he also created a free, specially created short story before this came out that's actually on Comixology now. It's a nice little sort of standalone tale about a couple of goblins meeting the heroes, and it perfectly sort of sets you up for the world to follow. I read it after the first issue, and hugely enjoyed it. So it's not like you don't need to read it, but it's free. You know, bloody hell. You know.
So people who do like a zero issue and make it free online to read before you buy the first issue. What kind of crazy behaviour is that?
I know, it's mad, isn't it? So but Hillbilly, get it, it's brilliant, end of, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of this. You can check it out now on comixology.co.uk, and we'll probably post some pictures of it anyway, because it does look lovely.
Cool.
Anyway, David, what book would you like to talk about?
Well, seeing as it's just been published and I've got some work in it,
that's a very mercenary attitude.
I'd like to talk about the Zarjazz 2016 Summer Special.
Nice.
Zarjazz is basically the 2000 AD fanzine. There are two. There's Zarjazz and there's Dog Breath, which is for the Strontium Dog basically fanzine world. But Zarjazz is basically includes all the 2000 AD characters. And as fanzines, they're actually quite unique, really, because Rebellion, who own 2000 AD characters, actually allow Dave Evans, who's the editor, and Future Quake, his little publishing group, to actually publish these characters and play with their characters. And that way, we all, as independent creators, get to draw and write for them as well.
A little breeding ground as well, isn't it, Dave, as I understand? You know what I mean?
It is, Tony, yeah. There have been quite a few talents that have been picked up from the 2000 AD editorial that have gone on to actually work in the 2000 AD comics. So, I mean, you know, it's worthwhile people actually, getting involved and actually submitting to Dave, scripts, and actually taking on art duties and actually getting scripts to work with. I mean, if you're aspiring to be a comic strip artist, it's hard working to somebody else's script. So I mean, at the end of the day, again, you know, I don't mean to put people off, but Dave Evans and also Richmond Clemens, who also helps them on the editorial side, when you first contact them, they're not rude, but they're very businesslike, and they basically run it like a proper comic, as far as I can tell. If you send a script in, they'll tell you what they think in polite terms. And again, you know, if you're an artist, they'll give you artwork, and obviously you know, they'll tell you, if you send samples in, they'll tell you what you think and stuff. But nine times out of ten, they're very good to work for. They you know, they run a good ship, and if you're an aspiring comic strip artist, it's well worth getting involved with them.
I mean, Cards on the Table, I've done quite a lot with the guys. Both those two guys, and also Dr. Bob, who used to run the original Dog Breath, that they then sort of took over and sort of reshaped as well. I've done quite a few things with them. And they're great guys. They're very, very 2000 AD orientated. That's the world of comics to them, I think. I don't think they'll mind me saying that. They're not interested in the big two. They're interested in you know, the worlds of 2000 AD for Zarjazz and the sort of Strontium Dog universe for the Dog Breath, you know. But yeah, very accommodating, and they'll put you in with some. I've had some great artists do work with of mine in there. Some really lovely stuff. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, nice.
Well, I mean, they've had people that have sort of gone through that 2000D fans might recognise now. They had a guy called Nick Dyer that was working in Zarjazz. That's been published in 2000AD now in the magazine. Drawing Judge Dredd, so he was picked up. Jake Lynch, who's a recent addition, he's very good. He's drawing Dredd as well as other things for 2000 AD. And just recently, they picked up Steve Austin, who's really, really good.
The $6 million man, bloody hell!
Indeed. I think they've had a few famous, even more famous names in older writers and artists that have come from it as well. I think Mike Carroll might have come from Zarjazz, but if not, he's written a few scripts from them. So it's a good place for picking up talent.
Yeah, you always see them at you don't see them at every convention, and they're not really part of the small press scene per se, but they always have a big presence at, say, for example, Thought Bubble. They've always got a huge table, and they're putting out book after book after book, and it's all quality, you know, really is to me.
Well, Dave actually runs Future Quake Publishing, and he produces a couple of other titles as well. They produce the Future Quake magazine, which is basically sci-fi and fantasy, I think, and they also produce Something Wicked, Something Wicked magazine, which is obviously horror. And again, I heard last year at Thought Bubble, I heard it from quite a good source, I think it's still accurate, that one of the guys from Rebellion actually said, you know, like to people, if you know, we're looking at people in Future Quake as well. Yeah. So again, you know, if you're a writer or an artist, and you want to get into Rebellion in 2000 AD, then have a right there. But it, you know, nothing's guaranteed, but they just sit there looking, you know, they always keep an eye out, and it's nice to know, you know. So
yeah, again, definitely,
you know, if there's anybody out there, just send stuff to Dave, you know, and you know, whether you're a writer or an artist. And I think the thing is just be patient, you know, just be patient and send stuff off, and because he's quite inundated at times, I hear. So, okay.
Yeah. So if you, as an artist, you say you got in touch and said, "Right, I want to draw a comic," it's just like you'd get part like what your script would be, and what would that be, like 10 pages, 6 pages, or just
can be. I mean, I've done sort of 4 pages, but I think they do up to sort of 10 or more. But I think they're very sort of they cater for what your style is. Oh, they've got a script of mine at the moment, and they've been saying, "Look, we're looking for someone who can carry off this kind of style," you know.
Oh, Lord, what on earth could that be?
Yeah. Erotic fiction. So I think they're very much, they take care in who they join up together and stuff, you know. Yeah, definitely.
Interesting.
I know that, Paul Moore, who's a friend of the show and a top artist himself, in the one you're talking about here, is it the summer special, is that what it is, Dave?
Yeah.
He's got a Devlin War strip, which is absolutely brilliant. Really good, and there's sort of a great scene of Devlin War saying, "Let's fight fisticuffs," and having a fight with aliens and punching through their heads. And you can see why Paul's been chosen for that, because he's got that perfect sort of classic style for it, you know. Mm. Very much like your job in there as well, dude. You know, you've got the ABC Warriors is really well suited to your sort of style. You know, you can do that sort of space opera, robotic kind of thing.
I love drawing robots and war and science fiction. I mean, I'll draw anything. And I think that's one thing that you've got to sort of realise with comics and that. And sorry if I sound sort of preachy or whatever, but there's one thing I learned, which is, you know, you can't just do one thing. You've got to try your hand at everything.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody said to me, "Oh, I'm not really that keen on football," but if I was told that I had to draw a football story, You know, that's what you've got to do, you know. And I think one of the good things with this the 2008 Czar Jazz fanzine is that there's such a variety of different characters that, you know, like, I had to do the Bad Company. And I'm, you know, I'm not really that big a fan of Bad Company. I love the creators that created it, but it was never for me one of the stronger stories, where I know other people out there absolutely loved it. But I got the script and I really enjoyed doing it. I think you've just got to basically take what you're given and basically, you know, because I think when you first start off working for them, doing scripts and stuff, they give, you know, like you pretty much, they give you a script and basically, you know, they'll probably give you a choice of about three or four. And basically you pick one. Sometimes I don't give you a choice to just say, look, we need this doing, can you do it? And as time goes on, obviously, like, you get a bit more leeway as to what you can ask for. Once you've proven that you can meet the deadlines and do stuff, you know. So it's, you know, it's like everything. You've got to prove that you can basically come up with the goods, because at the end of the day, this is an ongoing fanzine. You know, it's produced two or three times a year, and Dave produces other magazines, so he needs people he can rely on to produce. Just like in you know, 2008 Real, or one of the big two. You know, it's about proving your worth basically and keeping up with it.
Yeah, I mean, if you go, I think they're Future Quake, aren't they, on Twitter? I think they put a little shout out every so often for creators on there. But I'd say, look, I'm looking through this now, and there's nothing in there that wouldn't fit into 2008 AD to me. You know, this is probably the best quality anthology out there at the moment from an art point of view. You know, it's great stuff.
I mean, obviously, like, excluding my own work, but I'll talk about other people's work. I mean, the first strip, the Judge Dredd strip there by, is it Paul Williams?
It's Mark Howard Wright, a Paul Williams artist, yeah.
Well, I've worked on some of Mark's script. He's actually known as the legendary shark on the 2008 forum. and he writes some really great scripts. He's done a lot of really nice things on the forum. When Carlos Iscara, one of the creators of Judge Dredd, was ill, he put together with a load of other people. He put together a get well booklet for him. Got all the artists and writers to draw stuff from in the forum and elsewhere. He's written a lot of scripts, but Paul Williams' work there is absolutely beautiful. The page, the angles of Dredd, the grey tones, you know, the dynamic layouts, just really, really beautiful. I mean, I looked at it and I just thought, wow, you know, got to up my game, you know. So
I mean, I looked at this and I thought it's better than, I don't want to do anyone down, but I actually preferred reading this to the current Dredd story, I've got to tell you. Absolutely beautiful stuff, yeah. He's got a real Ron Smith style to some of the panels there as well, you know.
Well, I'm sure he'll be very happy to hear that, Tony. You know, so, I mean, I would be. You know, it's always nice to get to hear a compliment.
Yeah, I mean, your stuff's brilliant. I love the Scottish ABC Warrior was just spot on. That made me laugh out loud. Yeah, but the other one I have to say I really rate is the Nemesis to Warlock, Loving the Alien, which is written by Mick Cassidy, written an art by Mick Cassidy, colour by Kaya Zandkic. Then that is absolute fucking quality, like lovely stuff. You know,
yeah, really I'd have to agree. I mean, I congratulated Mick on Facebook, actually. I sort of like said to him, it was absolutely wonderful. And the colour pages and everything are beautiful. And again, you can see that he's sort of like a really big fan of Kevin O'Neill as well, even though Mick's his very own distinctive style. And I believe that he works on Family Guy as well.
Okay.
But I'm not sure, but I think he's an animator on Family Guy. But you can see that he loves Kevin O'Neill and Nemesis. And the panels, again, the layouts, the attention to the detail, you know, and the world of Termite, absolutely beautiful. Once more, I looked at it again and I just thought, wow, you know. I just feel so lucky, actually, to be in this magazine with this sort of, like, small press talent there, you know.
Well deserved, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, the 2008 world, we don't see much of it, but it has got its own fan base, isn't it? Extra to the comics world, just on its own. Do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've been reading it obviously since Prog One, came out on the 26th of February 1977, and I was drawn into it because my uncle Peter. Got me into comics, and he used to read the all the superhero stuff. You know, Spider-Man, I think he's got an issue 14 somewhere where he first meets the Hulk and the Green Goblin. And he also read all the horror, the American horrors that came over in the 60s. And okay. I used to have regular nightmares reading those. And when I used to have to stay over at grandparents where he was living at the time, he used to have all the old Wolfman and Frankenstein models above the bed. Yeah, and he used to scare the bejesus out of me. And he got me in. And the point I'm getting to is I used to read the 2000 AD stuff, the superhero stuff and the Marvel and stuff from him. But when 2000 AD came along, and I got into it through Dan Dare, because I saw that Dan Dare was in it, yeah. I was suddenly gripped, because there wasn't very many actually science fiction comics out.
Okay.
And that were mainstream and around. And I was really a big sci-fi fan. And when I saw it, I just had to keep reading it. So,
Yeah, I'm a big fan of it myself. Yeah.
So where can you get Zarjazz and Dog Breath and stuff?
Okay, well, what you can do is you can get Zarjazz online at futurequake.co.uk/shop.php. And they're pretty good. I've never had any troubles when I've had to order stuff from them.
They're very good, aren't they?
Yeah, Dave's a lovely guy, and you've got no worries with them. I think this is actually quite unique, this one, because normally Zarjazz is published A5, which is physically half the size of 2000 AD, but this one's actually an A4, so it's actually really nice for me as well, because obviously I get to see my artwork up a little bit bigger this time.
Yeah, I think that Torquemada strip definitely would benefit from that, because that's quite copy heavy, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah. That's a great wraparound cover as well, isn't it?
Nigel Dobbin, yeah. What they tend to do is they tend to get 2000 AD artists that have been published, they tend to get to do the covers.
Okay.
So everything inside is basically independent artists and you know, aspiring to get in or just doing it for the fun of it. And the covers, they tend to ask art droids, as they're called, from 2000 AD to, if they've got time to contribute.
got an Ace Trucking. Ace Trucking's on the cover. How cool is that?
Yeah, I used to love Ace Trucking.
Me too.
Yeah, it's really, really funny.
What the fuck were they smoking when they wrote that, eh?
Oh, man. I mean, well, yeah, it got very madcap towards the end. I think I preferred the first sort of like year or so of it. And then afterwards, it was like, it was good, but it was, as you say, it was definitely sort of like got madder and madder.
Yeah, I love Ballardinelli's artwork, though, I have to say. He fell out of favour for a bit, didn't he? People went, oh, he's just sort of regular 2000 AD, a bit, you know, when some of the flashier guys came along. But I just found him so readable, you know.
I loved him as well, Tony. When he illustrated the first two 2000 AD Dan Dare stories, he was the guy that illustrated, the first 26 issues of it. And as an 11-year-old, I was just absolutely gobsmacked that from my dad's Dan Dare, drawn beautifully by Frank Hampson and Frank Bellamy, etc., etc.
It was very straight looking, wasn't it?
It was beautiful. And of course, you know, very, very, you know, very old sort of imperial sort of like absolutely beautiful art. But when 2000 AD Dan Dare came along and Bernardinelli was drawing it, I was just absolutely gripped. It was just like, wow. Yeah. And the biogs and some of the first monsters to appear in it, and of course Star Wars was just about coming out, you know.
Yeah.
So they were sort of like in the running with that. Bernardinelli's always been one of my favourites. I think the only times where I've not really sort of like enjoyed his art as much was when he was drawing Slane.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I used to love all the backgrounds and all the animals and stuff, but I didn't really like the way and I didn't really like the way he drew Slane. But his warp spasm was absolutely amazing. Everything else he's ever done, I've absolutely loved. You know, like Meltdown Man. Well, again, you know, like they went with his strengths, which is drawing animals and things like that. So that's brilliant.
If you haven't guessed, folks, David's a fan of 2000 AD.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
No, that's why we got you on here. So, from one publication, Zarjazz, which is chock full of 2000 AD characters, etc., to a character that could sit quite comfortably amongst all of those characters that you see on a weekly basis in 2000 AD. Mr. David, I'm about to ask you the big question. This gets more dramatic every week I do it.
Yeah, it does.
Your character, Shaman Cain, pitch it to us.
Okay, well, Shaman Cain is a science fiction horror. It's set after a zombie plague war, which has ravaged many of the civilized world in the known galaxy. Shaman Cain is part of a shamanistic warrior order, and they do their best to protect living beings from supernatural evil, basically. So, yeah, I mean, that's basically it. You know, that's basically the pitch.
That's all you need, isn't it? It does exactly what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
I say I'm on the third book at the moment, and I'm really enjoying doing it. I tried basically with Shaman Cain to produce something that you could pick up book two without reading the other two, and you'd be absolutely fine.
You're telling sort of like shorter sort of standalone stories, aren't you? That would you say those are part of it? There's a bigger narrative going on in the background, but they're smaller, you know, self-contained stuff, or is it just literally one shot, one kill sort of stories?
No, well, that's the way I've designed it. I mean, you've hit the nail right on the head. What I've tried to do is basically have a number of stories in each issue that are, you could read them as standalone, but actually have in the background a slightly bigger plot arc going. I'm not really trying to sort of ram that plot arc down people's throats, as it were. I'm just sort of just letting it boil and just letting it brew. And mainly, I mean, one of the reasons I really liked that was I always used to be quite a sort of like Star Trek Next Generation fan. And one of the things I noticed that I really liked about the way they wrote those shows was they'd have two stories going on. They'd have a story of the week, and then maybe they'd have a bigger story going on over, say, the series towards sort of later series. So that's what I sort of tried to do with Shaman Cain. You know, have something going on in the background for people that are regular readers, but make it so it's like if they can't get hold of issue one or issue three, they can actually pick it up and read whatever.
That's a great way of doing it. So the actual character himself, you know, how did that story? How did he come to be?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. Well, it's a shame actually, because I haven't got my roughs here. But it was literally that, Vince. I was trying to think of a character that I could do in that sort of sense.
Yeah.
But I could actually indulge my passions of sci-fi and horror. And one of the things is I'm sure Dan will know, being another artist, is I wanted a vehicle that if I really got tired of it, I could sort of drop it for a while and basically do something else. The way my brain was sort of working was to sort of come up with a character that could do these things, sci-fi and horror, and then basically I could work on it, get a 24 to 28 page comic together, and then basically sort of like, again, if I wanted to work on something else, I could drop it and do that. So yeah, that's where the idea basically came from. Just looking again, you know, looking at my passion for 2000 AD characters is obviously there. But yeah, I really wanted a character that I could sort of like plunge into sci-fi horror. And it seemed to me, after a bit of sort of thinking and playing around with various characters, Shaman came to sort of like the fore, as it were.
Interesting, because you were talking about Star Trek, and you know, it was that little period towards the sort of middle period of Star Trek and Babylon 5 that you began to get that arc, didn't you? You had a story of the week, but you got an arc. So the arc in Shaman Cain is this encroaching sort of zombie world, is it, that's taking over? Is that part of it, or?
Yeah, as I said in the pitch, leading off your question, basically the plague war has happened, and this is set some time afterwards. Yeah. I've not really disclosed when. And the civilized worlds are getting themselves back together, and of course the shaman elite are there to protect the civilized worlds and also take on the various supernatural entities that might wish to do people harm. And of course they're not sure what's caused the zombie plague war. Right. And so part of the plot arc is certain things that come up over the stories, so that sort of link together. And Shaman Kane begins to piece something together, you know, that maybe something else is going on. And that's basically really without giving anything more.
Yeah, because so you've got a long eye on this. What have you got, like a 5 or 6 issue arc of you, or?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I could keep it going on forever, really, just doing, as you're saying, it's like just basically just doing like one-off stories and combining them into comics. I mean, I think sometimes, you know, like the first two issues, I've had like 3 stories per comic. For this third story, I've got like 3 parts to one big story.
Yes.
Next issue, I might decide to just do 2 stories in it. And you know, again, have links, you know, and then go back to the 3 format. So yeah, I mean, to be honest, it would be good to sort of, you know, it'd be good to if I was going to sort of try and complete the plot arc and maybe do it in like 12 issues. But to be honest, I've not really got any plans for that at the moment. It's just like do them, have fun, get them out there and progress, you know, like have the single stories, but progress the narrative as it's going along. I have definitely plans for it, but I haven't decided, you know, like how far I really want to sort of like, you know, whether I want to draw something to an end to bring something else in or not, you know, with the big guitar.
So we're not going to talk about the details of 3. You very kindly sent me it to do a review. I have to say, I absolutely loved it. But just a little peek into it is that you seem to be getting your frustrations out in a way that I totally understand around some pop culture people. Is that a tease we can say?
Yeah, you can mention them if you want.
With some quite amusing, let's say a twist on what their actual names are. Should we just say that for the moment?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I thought you might like those. I was hoping you'd like those. Yeah. Yeah, well, again, you know, I think humour's a you know, you've got to have a little bit of humour in some of these stories. I don't like to take things too seriously with a lot of the Shaman Kane world. You know, I do like to be serious, but I also like to be able to basically add the humour in there. Yeah. I think it's prevalent in 1 and 2. I mean, in 2, the first story, I Station Z-Bar, you know, I noticed you're a big fan of John Carpenter, and a couple of weeks ago you said that you liked The Thing, Vince.
Oh, God, you know? Yeah. Love it. Yeah.
The Thing is my favourite movie as well, funnily enough. If good I was stranded on Desert Island, The Thing would be it, mate.
Well, you don't want that thing on the desert island with you, because that'd just be awful, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well,
you don't want Vince on a desert island with you either, would you?
don't get me started on another poll. Tony.
Chasing you with his thing.
Oh, bastard.
Yeah.
So is it one of the things, kind of, obviously with 2000 AD, they've got that very kind of the satire and kind of like the humour running through it, which obviously it's got the same through Shaman Kane, which I really enjoy. I mean, essentially this ripped that off wholesale for like Robocop, which is one of my favourites, but that kind of... constant that you're telling a straight story, but there's always this kind of dark humor there, which is it's really good. Really like it.
Yeah, we do that very well in Britain, don't we? I think, you know, that nasty little sort of sharp humor that improves something that could be straight action or straight horror. You know, it gives it that other level. Do you think?
Yeah,
definitely. Sci-fi definitely benefits. Sorry, Dan, because I know Joss Whedon said once, he said you can make it dark, you can make it perilous, you know, you can take them to almost the apocalypse, and then at the end, for God's sake, tell a joke.
Do you know what
I mean? Because I think a lot of the stuff that does all these epic things, but there's no humour in it, they're not fun. They're not fun to read.
It's got to have some fun, even if it's kind of like you're laughing, it's not like a nice laugh, you know what I mean? Like someone telling a joke with something... I know, unfortunately, happening to someone, but it is amusing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because otherwise it all becomes one note, like, I can't say Batman vs. Superman because I've not seen that, but
you just
Man
have.
Of Steel. Yeah, it becomes absolutely one note. There's no humour, there's no laughs, there's no smiles, and that's what you want to see with a Superman film, surely.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's an example we're not going to discuss.
I'd agree with everything you said, you know. I mean, and I think with Shaman Kane, or with anything really, is if you're going to have humour in it, you've also got to portray that you actually believe in the world as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was Doctor Who, Tom Baker or somebody like that was saying it. They were saying, you know, like, yeah, it's great to have a bit of a laugh with the other cast, and basically everybody, you know, have a bit of humour in there, but everybody's got to totally believe it for the show to work. And I think it's the same with writing and drawing a comic book, really. It's great to have humour in it, but you've got to believe in what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That totally comes across with Shaman Kane as well. I think you get the notes, you hit the nail on the head every time, I think.
You know, oh, cheers.
Which is why we like it, which is why we've got you on.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. And you kill annoying people off Top Gear. Oops, didn't say that.
I don't normally do that sort of thing, but I just thought I'd put something like that in there for fun. I won't be making a habit of doing you know, like too many things like that.
But I know, 2008, I mean, we've said its name several times, but that's certainly not afraid of taking pop culture and then just totally spinning on its head, is it?
Well, you mentioned, talking about dog breath, I brutally killed in a Strontium Dog story in Dog Breath quite a few years ago now, a character called Jamie Bolivar. I can't possibly think who that might be.
I've not kind of two up with kind of 2008 of recent years, but obviously they've had Strontium Dog stories where he's gone back for Hitler and stuff like that and Reagan. Yeah. Would they tackle that kind of material nowadays?
I think they would, yeah, definitely. Yeah. That was the Sickle Gruber grab, wasn't it? That was actually my favourite ones growing up. I think they would do.
If you read the recent Slain, there's quite a lot of little political jibes and stuff like that, little in jokes, aren't there? If you know what's going on in the sort of British politics at the moment, there's quite a little jokes towards that, I think, as well. Yeah, a little bit. Not as much, maybe, as obvious as they've done in years gone by.
Yeah, I mean, when you got Strontium Dog literally going back in time to get Hitler, and sort of making sort of comments of about sort of the political class at the moment.
Judge Dredd would never shy away from having a clearly the character that's meant to be fucking Margaret Thatcher or someone. You know, it was always that as well.
Well, funnily enough, after they did the Sickle Gruber grab, the Strontium Dog story, they actually did another story. I can't remember. I think it was they had Ronald Reagan in it. So that was with Durham Red, wasn't it? Durham Red, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, they went back to have to go and grab President Reagan. And of course, you know, at the time when it came out, there was all the furore going on between President Reagan and the Russians at the time. And you had two tribes go to war by Frankie Goes to Hollywood. And of course,
spitting at it as well, yeah.
Absolutely. So again, you know, 2000 AD was sort of basically, you know, so, you know, like cutting in on that. And as readers, you know, we were lapping it up. I mean, it was exactly what you saw in Spitting Image character-wise. We were getting in the pages of Strontium Dog, you know, like Ronald Reagan was this sort of almost sort of like mad president that they were carting around, who couldn't even tie his shoelaces.
And if there was ever a time that it needs to come back. I think it's now, isn't it? Let's face it. You know, the amount of tweets I've seen saying, "Are we Spitting Image was still going?" Because we got some class people ready for that, haven't we?
Be good. I used to love that as a kid.
Just get the old pub puppet out of retirement.
Yeah.
One done.
What's that joke I saw earlier about? Was it something about a guy's in a restaurant and he goes in and he's got a peanut allergy and he eats some food and he thinks, "Oh, I'm beginning to swell up. My face is swelling up. My lips are getting really big and my ears are growing." Oh no, I'm Michael Gove.
Yeah. Yeah, I read that. It's quality. Yeah.
But thankfully, Shaman Kane doesn't need modern politics to keep it going.
No, that's a good thing as well. Yeah, I mean, for me, while I've always enjoyed reading stuff like that in 2008, I also like comics for a bit of escapism. So it's nice to actually go on that as well. You know, it's like, I don't mind political comment, but it's nice also if they can sometimes you can pick something up that keeps it light. You know.
I see exactly what you're talking about in issue three. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, going back to Doctor Who again, you know, sort of like it's nice, like say with Genesis of Daleks, you know, that's just another word. The Daleks, Genesis of Daleks story was just another word for Nazis, you know, fascism. So, but it never got deeper than that. So, you know, like sometimes it's just nice, you know, like if you can pick up a comic and the message is light like that, you know. Other times, you know, other people want deeper.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't always have to be so on the nose, just suggesting topics by kind of, like you say, with the Daleks kind of being lined up with the Nazis, and you just sort of you present this and then you move on from there. you kind of like set up the kind of the story and the themes behind it, and then it's explored in a different way.
I miss those days of, you know, a good adventure story that's got a little bit of a satirical edge to it, you know,
definitely,
a little bit of a satirical DIY edge, which is what 2000 AD did so well, you know, and it still does on occasion now, you know.
Yeah, so, I mean,
you look at the classic characters with like Nemesis and Torquemada, neither of them are kind of the good side. They're just opposing ideologies, and one minute you'd be totally with like Nemesis, and another minute it'd be doing something absolutely horrible. But then, you'd flip between the two.
The Vulcans in Invasion. You look at the Vietnam War, which is lampooned and is sort of politically sort of pointed out in Bad Company. There's so many stories that, you know, Judge Dredd, for God's sake.
Yeah.
You know, how much of that is said about, you know, the current situation? But said humorously, it's done with, you know, sort of DIY punk ethic, but it, you know, it's a good adventure story as well, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you know, like, the obviously, as we've said before, 2000 AD has a great history of this. And I think for me, I think it's great when they've got a story that maybe will explore all that a little bit deeper. But for me, my favourite ones have always been the ones where the stories have that political element, but they're good fun. They don't get too sort of dragged down onto the dogma of either sort of like side. I think it's nice, you know, that way, because for me it's about escapism a lot of the time, and that's what I try to do with Shame and Kane. Make it a good fun read. It's mainly action. There's a bit of a plot going on, but it should be fun.
You've also got a good central character, sort of like linchpinning it all together, haven't you? Really.
Yeah. Sorry, Vince. Yeah.
No. You carry on.
I think with Kane, I was going to go down and sort of make him sort of like the archetypal hero, you know, like perfect almost in every way. And then as I was writing it, it just didn't go that way. He's flawed. You know, he makes mistakes. You know, his family of characters that are with him are basically, you know, like they're always arguing, or, you know, there's something going on. You know, they all love each other, but it's not a happy ship. You know, I just like that sort of stuff.
So, how do you plot out your? How do you write then? Because do you do a full script and then work from that?
Most of the time, yes. What I do is I ferment ideas in my head, and I'll do a bit of mountain bike riding. So when I'm out on my mountain bike going up a hill or whatever, I'll be thinking about plot lines for Kane, and I'm sort of like coming up with a plot idea for the next book, going back to where Kane was actually born. And sort of like umming and ahhing about that, you know, and sort of, and so what I do is I jot the ideas down, and over a few months, I come up with ideas, maybe about six or seven different ideas for stories, and narrow them down. And once I've got that, then what I do is I'll do a plot synopsis for each story, just i.e. bullet points, basically, of how the story's going to work. Because I'm not really, you know, I'm more of an artist than a writer. And then basically, once I've got the beats of the story, I can then start to flesh out the actual pages themselves, you know, like writing-wise, you know, I can think about what needs to go on. You know, I'll break it down. I'll keep breaking each page down. And I can work out what points I need to put in it. And then that way I can look for, like, mistakes or things that need to be linked in to make a particular plot device work.
Good, like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So the other thing I noticed, dude, is how you coping. Is issue four going to be all colour? Because I know you're experimenting with a bit of colour here and a bit of black and white there. How do you decide about that?
Well, what I'm probably going to do is I might have a break from Shame and Kane next year, and I'm developing another character at the moment, which I might do. But I might actually—you never know. If I get time, I might actually start to do, you know, work on Shame and Kane 4. But what I really want to do is I'll probably keep Shame and Kane as two black and white stories and one colour story. And what I try and do is make each story about 8 pages long. And that way it keeps the costs down on the actual print runs. And also it harks back to the way that 2000 AD used to be when I was a kid. I used to love picking up 2000 AD. And it would be a colour cover, and then it would be all black and white stories until the centre spread. And in the 70s, like, when you got that colour spread, it was just absolutely incredible. And then you went back to white stories. And I've never been able to get over sort of like how lovely black and white art, line art is. You know, there's no if there's no hiding bad artwork.
No. Yeah, definitely.
With colour, you can basically like get away with it a little bit. So one of the reasons that I chose to do Shame and Cain with, say, two black and white stories, the first one and then the last story is black and white, and then the centre story colour, is basically sort of like homage to that sort of British comic of you know, the 70s and that. I think with the new character I'm developing, which I'm not going to say too much about now, it's a superhero story, I'm looking at doing that full colour. It's going to be 24 pages, not including cover, American size format. I've got, you know, obviously that will come down to the cost and things like that. But yeah, it's mainly all to do with cost, and also it was sort of like to hark back to that whole, you know, the style of 2000 AD with the and other British comics like Valiant and things like that, that basically had the black and white stories and then that absolutely wonderful splash of colour in the middle. Mm.
No, brilliant. Yeah, I love all that stuff as well. It always used. I remember reading the earlier 2080s. I think I started about 120, 130 around that time, and thinking, "Yeah, who's going to be in the colour pages? Who's it going to be this time?" You know, that sort of thing with me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it absolutely. I mean, obviously, starting from page one, it was Dan Dare all the time, and just some of the stuff that was coming out there. I mean, like again, you know, on TV, we didn't have much. You know, you had Space 1999, you had Doctor Who. But again, you know, we didn't have, once they'd been on telly, that was it. You didn't have videos or anything else.
No.
So having something like 2000 AD, whereas you had these just absolutely beautifully vibrant, like pictures of alien worlds and space battles in space drawn by Bernard and Ellie, you could read it time and time again. And that's what I used to do. I mean, 2000 AD was the first comic I started collecting. I had it in my wardrobe, and each week it just used to, the pile of comics used to get higher and higher and higher. And I just used to pore over it every day. You know, it's just absolutely.
Yeah, people forget, don't they? If you miss Doctor Who on a Saturday night, you ain't never going to see it again.
Yeah,
it was like that back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know,
these days ain't too bad a thing, but yeah,
I've got fond memories of going swimming with my family on a Monday, then coming racing back for the Sylvester McCoy Doctor Who.
Oh yeah, and, weekdays by then, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I will say that bad guy, you know, the Bertie Bassett bad guy.
That's the one, yeah, that really sticks in my head.
That's terrifying. When you're a kid,
is it really?
Yeah,
when I was a kid, it really terrifies.
Terrifying.
It was horrible.
Yeah, it's horrible.
That was the Happiness Patrol, wasn't it? The Happiness Patrol. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't they throw a load of lemonade on the floor and it melted his feet?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
Which is the way you want to get rid of every bad guy. I think we should all do that for now. Just have lemonade.
Yeah, cream, lemonade around the back of the chocolate's made, and then you can just, you know.
Why, Tony, every time?
You know what? I was doing that the other day, teasing one of my family. But I'm afraid, Dan, you're wrong. You can't beat John Pertwee. John Pertwee is my doctor. Sea Devils and the music were absolutely terrible, mate. That music just...
That electronic score they had on it was famous, wasn't it, at the time?
Mate,
I wouldn't hold Sylvester McCoy as a good doctor above any of the others.
Let's not get into a Doctor Who fight. Come on.
No, okay.
Yeah.
But then again, Ace. You had Ace, which we kind of was Ace.
Her jacket. Oh, my word. Remember
that? I remember everyone going mad. What was the Second World War one they did about the sort of vampire creatures in the sea? Can't remember the name of it now. But I remember everyone, I was at boarding school, everyone going wild, because when she climbed down this sort of rope ladder, you could see the top of her stockings. That sort of blew everyone's
absolute
mind. Oh my God.
Filth. Get it off my TV. Filth.
Yeah. It's like Katie Manning with a leg around a Dalek. It's like that. You've seen that, Dave. I know you've seen that, mate. Yeah.
Filth.
Yeah. So, anyway, basically, you know, that's.
Come on, Dave, get us back on track. Come on, let's go.
Yes, mate. At the end of the day, that's all we had. You know, as Vince said, once it'd been on, that was it. We didn't have videos, we didn't have any repeats. So having stuff like 2000 AD and other comics, I mean, I think I used to collect Planet of the Apes as well. You know, and I think Planet of the Apes was one of the first sort of Marvel franchises that I got. And again, it was difficult to get it because I seem to remember, I think you guys were saying on the podcast the other week that, you know, you'd go to your newspaper shop one week and pick it, try and pick it up. And the next week it wouldn't be there. Somebody else had bought it, you know.
It was difficult. Times of comic collectors then, wasn't it?
It was, and that's if you got any pocket money as well. I mean, I think I was lucky to get about 8 or 10p pocket money a week, and I think
people who live outside London must be difficult because I don't think they have money, do they? Just sort of exchange farmish.
here we go. Jesus, it's not like Fury Road. As soon as you walk outside London. with tribes fighting over Cornish pasties. That's not how it works, Tony.
Here are you big city folks. We don't know what
that's enough. That's enough. little American Werewolf reference for you all there. Anyway, yeah, Shaman Kane is...
I saw Jenny Agutter on the tube recently.
Did she blank you again?
No, I gave her my seat and she gave me a little smile. And I thought, I've seen you naked in some films.
Yeah.
Hopefully mass-produced films.
Yeah,
so Shaman Kane, issue 1 and 2 are available now, but issue 3 you're launching at Bristol, is that right?
Yeah,
it's launching exclusively at Bristol. I'm going to be putting it online a couple of days afterwards, so anybody that needs to pick it up that can't make it to Bristol, hopefully will have it on Comixy, or they can contact me directly via Facebook. And if they do that, if I can, I'll do them a sketch and stuff like that.
You're at Bristol, aren't you, Vince?
I am indeed.
Yeah, I'm going to come down for it as well. Yeah, it should be good.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be brilliant.
Yes.
The Awesome Pod is going to have a presence at Bristol. So.
Yes.
Yeah. Nice. Find out more about that.
I'll send my full body armour then. And
Wear
splash-proof clothing.
Yeah. And always, always bring spare underwear.
Yeah, got a pair in my pocket.
Have you got any other cons you're going to be at this year, Dave?
I'm going to be it's actually Bristol. At the moment, I'm sort of thinking about. I don't know if there's going to be another Demon Con on in Kent.
It's a haphazard timetable, isn't it? Demon Con. Sometimes you don't know it's going to happen, don't you? I think. That's where I saw you last time, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was, yeah. And I think there's been another convention on in Kent in August. So normally they do DemonCon in February and August. So I think that's probably, I'm not sure, but that's probably sort of precipitated sort of pushing it back maybe. But I haven't heard anything from the organiser, Graham, what's going on. With conventions, I want to do at least another one or two this year, but I'm looking for basically one-day conventions, really. Within a 50 quid radius, basically.
Yeah, they get a bit pricey, don't they? They do get a bit pricey.
Yeah,
I think, obviously I'm not in it for the money. I mean, I love doing this, but I do try to sort of like not make too much of a loss when I go to them.
Yeah.
You know, if I can come back breaking even, that's fine, you know, because at the end of the day, it's about pushing the brand, you know, people reading the stuff. I'd much rather people read it. But if I can actually make... break even, it means I can print more. If I'm making losses all the time, then it means I have to dig in, you know, work harder and dig into my savings and stuff like that to produce it. So for me, it's a case of when I'm looking at conventions, I tend to see, right, how far can I get on 50 quid? Can I get there and back? Is it a one day? Because then I don't need a hotel, you know.
Yeah.
I will do 2 days, but it's a case of it's literally, you know, sometimes it's nice to have a jolly and go out and do stuff. But I sort of recently worked out, and I don't know if my maths are perfectly correct, but I worked out that if I'm selling a comic about £4 and the cost of the per unit was £2, and my outlay for a convention was £100, I'd have to sell close to 50 comics before I even start to make any profit.
Right.
So, again, this is my mathematics, so you never know. It might be a bit out, but it's a case of, you know, your only options are to basically charge more for your comics, is a shame, really, because, I mean, at the moment, I put out all the Shaman Canes and Spectre Show at £3.99. I had to put them up a little bit from £3.50 for exactly those reasons. You know, I just couldn't do it anymore for £3.50. To cover the print, you know, to do that. And
yeah.
Martillo's, I've had to put up to like £5.99 from £5 now, but that's 52 pages. I'd love comics to be, comics to be cheaper than that if possible. The answer is bigger print runs, but it's how much money you got to lay out for those bigger print runs.
How did you find Lawgiver, Dave?
I found it all right.
Obviously,
it's my second year there, and when I took it on, it was because it was a one-day event. I like Judge Dredd, but obviously I could see that mainly the people that are going to be going are really only interested in Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
And when I got there, I found that what I was doing was I was doing a lot of internet stuff. I was putting lots of Judge Dredd pictures on towards about the last month. You know, I was putting them on there, probably annoying some people actually, but at the end of the day, you've got to tell people you're there. And basically just saying, look, you know, Dredd sketches, if you buy a comic, you know, you'll get one of these free. And basically, you know, as I said earlier on in the podcast, I was just trying to come up with a strategy. To basically like say, look, guys, I mean, I know you're only really after the official stuff, but if you come and have a look, there's some good deals, you know. And yep. And then that way, you know, I was doing bundle deals. You know, if they buy sort of, you know, all three, they'd get something, you know, with it and a sketch. And I was actually finding that, you know, like some of the guys that were there, some of the guys and girls that were there dressing up, you know, cosplaying Dredd in a Dredd world, and that were like very, you know, like they were very giving, you know, and basically they were a great bunch of people. They came over, and now that some of them have actually had a look at Shaman Kane and some of the other stories, they're really into it, you know. So
yeah.
I found it really good. I mean, the organizers, Sue and Hadro and the people that were helping with her, put on a really, really good show. But I would say that, definitely, if you were down there, you as an independent comic seller, you definitely have to have some sort of angle,
right?
Pull in the Dredd fans.
To be fair, before we move on, we're going to move on in a second. But I know, but I just wanted to say, your Dredd, mate, is as far as I'm concerned, it's ready for prime time. I can see your Dredd certainly in the prog, mate. I've got to tell you, superb stuff, especially your coloured stuff, lovely. You know,
yeah. I mean, I did bad crop. Basically, I was. Every year they have an advent calendar on the 2000D forum, yeah. And all the fans basically do something and post it. The ones that want to take place that pay part that is, and post it on a day. So they'll and anybody can do anything basically. You know, like you go on, sign up for a day. If anybody wants to join in, they can. And normally I sort of like do one page a day, or if I haven't got time, 13 pages and put it on every day. It's just a bit of fun, really, and it's really good. I'm not sure I can do it this year because I've got too much on, but you know, at the end of the day, I've been doing it sort of like for the last 4 or 5 years now, and it's a good sort of like 3 months of my drawing time to get sort of 25 full colour pages, you know. So,
yeah.
Because so, I've got nobody helping me doing it, so it's you know, yeah. One of those things. But
he's a hard working man, folks. A hard working man. So, if you see him at any convention this year, well, you've heard it from the mouth of the man himself. He will do you sketches. You'll be able to get great books, and we thoroughly recommend.
I've had a couple of sketches, and they are spot on. Dude. Yeah, very good. Yeah.
Top stuff. You get your money's worth when you head to Dave's table. So
yeah,
thanks. Just really
that's all right. We'll send you the PayPal address.
he always says it. But he means.
I've got the. Those
Vince. Oh God!
The preliminary draw happened. Or even Tony. So don't give me that.
Oh, hear that? Is he trying to blackmail us, Tony?
I hope so.
I'm succeeding.
Won't be the first, but yeah, it won't be the last. Yes. Anyway, the events, Tony. What events have we got coming up?
We have got the 9th of July this year is Small Press Day. Which has crept up on us, isn't it? This is, I think it's the first year, is it? Does anyone know? Or?
I think it is the first year.
Yeah.
Did you want more info? Because that's all I've got.
That's all well done. Yeah. I actually put you on mute while I coughed, so you did well there, so that's good. there's a few that I've picked out. From 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Dead Universe Comics, which is Bourbon Street, Aylesbury, owned by the mighty Ian Hine. They've got loads of small press people. They've got competitions and raffles going on. Pop down to that. Orbital Comics and Gosh are working in conjunction with each other, which is quite cool to see, between 12 p.m. and 7 p.m. They've got multiple signings between the two shops, comic workshops, and they're going to working together in a collaborative comic in the same day, trying to get it finished, which is going to sound pretty good. Amongst the signings for that is Christian Ortiz, who's really good if anyone picks up his stuff. Sean Azzopardi, we talked about before. Robin Barnard, who's a regular there. Andy Puyarji, who we've certainly talked about before. But between 4 p.m. and 5 p.m., our friends of the show, Christian Wild Goose and Matt Gibbs, will be doing some sketching and some signing copies of comics. And also sitting beside them will be the Dead Canary guys. So Matt Fitch and Chris Baker will also be there. So that's an event to get to, Orbital and Gosh, all the way through that Saturday. 1 p.m. at the Frog Brothers Comic and Books, which is 7 Royal Arcade, Boscombe, BH14BT, is Indie Creators. Will be doing a Q&A, and that is that sarcastic bastard Mike Garley will be doing that. So that sounds quite good, as we all know him. And there's loads of events going up nationwide, from Brighton up all the way up to Scotland. So have a look for Small Press Day. That's coming up this Saturday. On the 15th to the 7th is Shrewsbury International Comic Art Festival. That's at the Quarry Park in Shrewsbury. It's Small Zone, SMALLZONE .co.uk. You can buy tickets from at it will be. Barry Kitson, I'm a big fan of. Goran Parloff is brilliant. Jason Starr, if anyone knows him, he's done some Ant-Man stuff, he's done some Wolverine stuff, and he's also a very accomplished noir thriller writer. I'm a big fan of his straight fiction as well, very good. Dave Taylor, who's done the aforementioned Doctor Who, Dylan Teague, John Wagner, and Howard Chaykin are going to be at that, so it sounds pretty cool. There you go, that's for the shout-outs, mate.
I've got an event to mention. Orbital Comics are doing another life drawing session.
Oh, cool.
It's entitled Marvel vs. DC. It's a multi-model life drawing session. Ooh. Goes for £15. It's on the evening of Friday the 15th of July. So that's a couple of weeks' time. Essentially, there's going to be a couple of life models. It's joined by people in cosplay. And it's going to be recreating Marvel vs. DC stuff. So I've been to a number of these events. They're always well-run.
Really great.
Really rate them. Yeah. They're really good. And I'm going to be at that one. So I hope to see you down there if you're an artist and you want to flex those muscles.
Oh, no, there's nothing Dan likes more than flexing muscles.
Yeah, flexing muscles.
Yeah.
See, I keep on hoping the model doesn't turn up and they say, anyone want to do this?
Your kit comes straight off.
Yeah.
Yeah, he goes, I've got my Power Girl costume. Let's get to it.
Yeah. Let's do this.
Oh dear. There's a couple of shout outs this week.
Yep.
We've got a Kickstarter from Sam Webster, the man behind Joe Cape and Arcadia. He's just launched his Kickstarter for his new sci-fi series, Unfamiliar Skies, which is about a 19-year-old runaway alone in the vast reaches of space.
It's a couple of pages, looks good, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's a real step up for Sam, I think. And I think I know that this is actually a project that's quite close to his heart.
He was in space once.
You were in space once.
No, he was, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. He may be there now. Sam, can you hear us?
Yeah. No, it's very good, Sam. Yeah, we love you, mate. And it's good to see.
You can find it on Kickstarter. He's got a 5-page preview of the comic there as well, and he doesn't have a massive goal. So hopefully, 27 days to go as we speak. I think he should make it. It's a nice project.
He's just covering print costs, isn't he? I think.
Yeah, I believe so. Oh, okay. He's got a very sort of clear rundown of the money that you're pledging, how Kickstarter breaks it down, like tax and printing and everything.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's nice to see that, because not everyone does that, show you where your money's going. So definitely check that out. And also the lovely Rachel Smith.
Yep.
Artist on the rise. You'll know her from, the Rabbit Artificial Flowers. She's been mentioned a couple of times on this show. She's actually a nice person, which is why she's been mentioned a couple of times on the show. But she's just launched her first ever Patreon campaign. Is that how you say it? It is Patreon, isn't it?
Patreon, yeah, I suppose. Patreon. Yeah, yeah.
It launched on July 1st to hopefully enable her to continue with her webcomic Bess. Now, Best is a comic that I've spoken, it was one of my recommendations. It's a very cool little series, this. It's basically, what is Best, I hear you say? Well, allow me to tell you. Basically, Best is a story about feminism, ideals of beauty, and mythological Japanese monsters, and is set mainly in a supermarket in Hull. What more do you need? What more do you need?
That's like my life.
It's true. The story focuses on Lindsay, a young woman who's having a bit of a rough time of it lately. Her life is about to get turned upside down pretty soon, though. And you can read it, Best Comic Online. I'll put a link in the show notes. It's a cracking project anyway. And Rachel's got a lot of projects on the go at the moment. But this is obviously a passion project, and she wants to be able to keep going with it. If the Patreon reaches like $300 per month, then she'll be able to resume updating it once a week. So,
right.
Patreon, she's got her like her Patreon goals. You've got a Patreon, Dan, haven't you?
I do indeed. Yep.
How
I can mention a bit more about that later.
Oh, sexy. Okay. Sexy.
Shameless plug.
That's what this show's all about. Yeah, so definitely check out Ray. Because it's the first time she's done it, I don't know if I'll ever do it, but if I ever do, I know I'd be nervous about doing it.
I think there's a lot of good, it's like Kickstarter Patreon. There's a lot of people who use it really well, and they do the right thing by it, and then there's a lot of people who just a dash for the cash.
Yeah, if you've got the ones like Dan Butcher, it'll give you your money's worth.
Yeah, definitely.
Jen Yilblad, she does loads on her Patreon.
And I think Rachel's got her head switched on, and I think if you get behind her, she will be producing some great stuff that is only for her patrons, I suppose. Yeah, put it that way.
The ones that do really well have got it down to an art form of
they know
what they're doing, and they give the people what they want.
And they're doing it because they love it, like all great comics and artists and stuff. They're doing it because they love it, and
you're giving them that money to do what you want to see from them. So. Do you know what I mean? They can do the comics because you're paying them for it.
It's kind of I think a bit more as a subscription service.
Yeah,
And I think if you're treating it like that, where people are paying you every month to produce a product which you then send out to them, I think that's the best way to look at it.
Do you think it helps to actually build like a reputation before doing something like that?
I think so. Yeah, I think to be fair, it works more for artists than it works for writers. I've seen a couple of writers try it, and I've cringed at a couple of their, I'll send you a quote out, a life-affirming quote once a week and stuff like that. I'm thinking, really?
What? Piss off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But with the artist, you can kind of like, you can stick up a picture a day and stuff, but with a writer, there's so much.
Yeah.
How do you put on concepts and visualize? It's very difficult.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how you do it.
Yeah, I think it's better. I think it works better for an artist, as it should do, because as artists all through the centuries have had patrons, haven't they? Mm-hmm. I think that's the idea. Yeah.
Oh, look, he's bringing it historical. Oh.
Well, look at that. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, look at you. but we love history. We love artists. We also like the superhero genre. Do you like the superhero genre? That's lots of people saying yes. Oh, yeah, it wasn't you guys. That's to the listeners.
Oh, I just shocked that transition there. It's so smooth.
Thanks.
Yeah. I got punched in the face by it.
But if you like superheroes punching people in the face, then you should check out A Place to Hang Your Cape. It's just a site for you. There's reviews, interviews, essays about the superhero genre. They're big supporters of the show and have a little Awesome Comics Pod page on there. And they're lovely to work with, I can say that, because I'm the one that has to deal with them. Dan and Tony do nothing. They just sit in their riders.
We don't care. We're on caravans.
Yeah, they're in the caravans.
Is that? Oh, it's not called that, is it? Trailers. Yeah.
Dan's got a trailer. You got a caravan.
Me and Dan have got a caravan in Clacton. I've not told you about this.
Nice. So, and when they're in their caravan and they get a decent Wi-Fi signal, they go to AP2HYC, which is where you can check out A Place to Hang Your Cape. If you like reading your comics digitally, I've mentioned today that that's pretty much all I do at the moment, read my comics digitally, because I don't leave the house. I think it's probably best for everyone involved.
Yeah, good idea.
So I use my my phone or my Kindle, and I check out my comics digitally. And another bunch of people who like to do that are the Pipe Dream Comics crew, pipedreamcomics.co.uk. And there's reviews, previews, exclusive interviews, some great stuff on there at the moment, some great articles and interviews. Alex and the guys are always doing good stuff. So pipedreamcomics.co.uk, place to go. And where would we be in this world What would we be? We'd be just without dreams. We'd be sad. We'd just be losers, wouldn't we? Absolute losers. Down the tubes. I know. I was starting to get really poetic then. it's too much drink. Where would we be without down the tubes? You've already done your yay.
Up the creek.
Oh dear. Yeah, John Freeman and the gang and Tony. They're always the place to go if you want the comics news and the latest press releases and everything. What's been happening at the moment, Tony?
I've got three going up this week, actually. Yeah, it's a few really interesting ones. I'm going to talk about one of them in a minute, but yeah, there's some good stuff going on there. Yeah.
Lovely. So check out downthetubes.net. There you go.
Oh, I've got a couple of shout-outs as well, if you don't mind.
Certainly, Tony.
Go for it.
Thank you. Maria Stowen, congratulations on winning Scottish Comics Best Graphic Novel Award. Very good. We love her work. It's great to see that. Take it as a compliment. Won that this year, rightly so.
Where was that she won it? What?
Glasgow Comic Con, I think. Just yesterday, I think it was.
Looks like that was a really good event as well. From what
doesn't it? Yeah. Mm. Really does. Yeah, it does. My other shout out is I've just come back from holiday, where I went and I joined up with a couple of other fellow travellers, celebrity friends of the shows, Pat and Lisa Mills, who I spent a couple of nights drinking quite heavily and chatting and laughing with. So just said I'd give them a shout out because they are such good company. I had a look at I don't think Pat will mind saying he showed me a sneak preview of some work that's coming out, which I'm not allowed to talk about, but looks fucking amazing. Awesome. I have to say, some of the best stuff I've seen for a long time.
Pat back on and talk about the Vampire Knight stuff.
Yes.
We didn't really touch on that too much in the last show.
We didn't talk about that much, but yeah.
I think we should just get him back on and have like a story time with Pat episode every so often.
He's a star, honestly. I mean, I was meeting them at like, I think I met them at 3 o'clock and we were still talking at like 1 a.m. and we didn't know where the time had gone. They're just great company, you know, both of them, Pat and Lisa, you know, both great people. And the other one is, final one is Man vs. Rock issue 5 has just come out. Yeah. And it is everything you want from Man vs. Rock. Abusive, downright fucking American. If you go to www.manvsrock.com, get yourself a copy. It's coloured as well, so all the new issues that are coming out are coloured. It's just hilarious. I was laughing my head off on the train the other day reading it.
Now, like, I think everyone should go back, if they haven't already, and listen to the Man vs. Rock episode we had. But if you don't know anything about it, just put it this way. There's rarely you can say that there's a comic that will make you lose control of your bodily functions in such
it's
a way.
So good. So good.
Yeah. So good in such a bad way.
Definitely. Yeah.
So check that out. Oh, dear. That almost works as a recommendation. But let's...
Almost.
Almost. Yeah. But that's not the recommendation. Yeah. So what recommendation have you got this week, Tony?
Right, because I wasn't here last week, I'm doing two, fuck you. first one is a comic called I Drank Holy Water. It's a visual diary by Zen Bucko. I don't think Zen will mind me saying, but who, aka her real name is Olivia Sutherland. I met her at LCAF a few weeks ago, and I bought this from her. It's a big old A4 card-covered... esoteric self-confessional book about her growing up, really, and all the sort of little experiences she's had. The first chapter is called Iconography, and she deals with her sort of early life in the church. And she grew up a sort of Irish Catholic, mostly in England. And she has little asides. I would say it's like a rawer version of maybe Tilly Walden's work. It's got a more of a satirical side. It's not quite as gentle. You put it against something like the sort of autobiographical works of James Kolchalka or Jeffrey Bound, something like that. It's verging on that, if you see what I mean. But it's where it differs from those is it's very cruel. It's got real hurtful moments. It's less romanticised than some of their work. There's a bit about I think she or someone she knows has had a skin ailment, and it's actually quite difficult to read at points because it's so sort of confessional, you know. She points out the ridiculousness of religion, which always makes me laugh. And then chapter 3 in it deals with the sort of therapy But it's basically a big old scream. It's like an artistic scream about her life and what she thinks going on in the world and stuff like that. Very raw. You'll feel for her reading it. It's got a little bit of a scattershot attempt at it, but then again, hasn't life, if you see what I mean. If you need to get a copy of this, I guarantee you will be surprised that someone who's just come out of art school, you know, quite a young person, can do this sort of work of this depth. If you go to Olivia Sullivan, illustration.co.uk, or you can follow her at ZenBucko, ZenBucko. If you head to her shop, which is www.zenbucko.bigcartel.com, that's my first one. And the second one is a book, I think a couple of us, I know you've read it, Vince, haven't you? Is Nom, the Demon Eater.
yes.
Mother of All Demons by Paul Tonner. He sent it through to us. He claims to be inspired by Moebius, the art of Jeff Darrow and Paul Pope. So he decided to create this character. It's a sort of skull-masked, monosyllabic, I don't know, barbarian character who only says the word nom and likes to go around eating demons. Essentially, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah, and immediately, you know, as soon as you say that all he ever says is nom, you've got my money.
Yeah. And he walks in this sort of hall of demons and this sort of multi-breasted, bat-winged, morbidly obese demon female, and she's sort of surrounded by guards and little flying baby creatures and stuff like that, and she says, "Oh shit, it's that monosyllabic wandering psycho cannibal Nom," and all he says back to her is Nom.
it's basically just an action set piece, isn't it?
But done really well, and with lovely black and white art.
Yeah.
And he basically got. She goes, "Oh, you haven't got a sword." And he goes, "Oh, I've got a bag full of swords." And he draws out what's described as a dirty, great big vorpal sword. And then he just basically slices and dices everyone who attacks him. It's sort of violent, a little bit dirty, crazy funny. And I think he's going to do some more, I think, for what he's saying. He says there's more in the way, and he just do this as a little taster. But looking at some of the pictures...
Well, I see what he did there. Yeah.
Looking at some of the pictures that are coming out of Glasgow, I think he did quite well on it. It seemed to be selling quite a few issues. If you go to heavyvoodoo.co.uk or at heavyvoodoo on Twitter, you can hook up with him and get a copy of him. Yeah, very, very good. It's an A4, actually. I thought it was smaller when he sent it through, but seeing people hold it in some of the pictures, it's A4, and it looks great. It looks great at that size. Very much a sort of... I'm going to put it as the cross between maybe a 2000 AD strip and something from heavy metal. It's got a little bit of both in there somewhere. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's me. Those two of mine.
Dan, what about you?
Nice one. On Wednesday, I went to pick up Tuesday, even I went to pick up my pull list at Orbital, and I always try and buy something, at least one or two things off of the independent spinner there. And I grabbed one comic. There's like, to be fair, you're not going to get £5 off me for 10 sheets of A4 paper folded in half.
Yeah.
And black and white.
I put
not
back
doing that
this week because of that, dude. I've got to tell you. Yeah,
it's just I don't mind. I've got no problem giving the artist a couple of quid, but it's like, come on, taking a piss a bit. So, like, and I see there's like full color efforts, and they're like a couple of quid cheaper. It's just like, okay, yeah. So this comic I picked up, Thimble, by Button Press Publications, art by Jason Brown, written by Jason Brown and Sarah Rowe, and lettering by Philip Rowe. So that's only three grades. Yeah. So this was like, I think he's only like £3 or £4 this one. And
right.
Straight away, it's a superhero comic, so I'm instantly drawn to that. It's essentially the button. What I've read up on Button Press is their remit is to like produce fun stories that are aimed at kind of like a younger audience or anyone. Do you know what I mean? Anyone can kind of pick up one of their titles.
Yeah.
And you're not going to see some guy getting his head smashed in with. A meat cleaver or whatever. But this one especially, I think all the tales have kind of like got some Irish folklore in, and Thimble was kind of like really rooted in that. She's a small kind of girl, like 3 inches tall, and by the use of kind of like an amulet that her aunt, who's a witch, has kind of given her, she can kind of return to normal height. And then through the comic you get these flashbacks of kind of this kind of the backstory of like this kind of event, how this kind of certain curse came about, and by the end of the story, kind of Thimble's kind of suited up in a kind of superhero type outfit and takes off her best friend to kind of find out whether this kind of myth is true. And then you see this kind of ghostly form at the end waiting for her. It's a really nice little comic. I'd recommend it for kind of all ages. Jason's art style really reminds me of kind of like a Mike Aldred.
Okay.
With a little bit of manga.
Right.
Yeah, it's really nice, bright, colourful. The colouring's really vibrant. Again, the story's really good, kind of, that, and the script, I can't really fault it at all. It's really on point. There's only one issue at the moment, but I presume they're working on more. They've got about two or three titles on their site, which you can see. I've actually got this. It is buttonpresspublications.com.
Cool.
And it's a really nice website. Got tons of stuff on there, so go check it out.
Nice.
Awesome, man.
So from something that's all ages to something that's definitely for mature audiences, my recommendation for this week is a book from Hellbound Media, who I saw at Cardiff. Good lads. It was good to catch up with Matt and Mark, as always. And I picked up their new book, Shock Value Presents The Disease, which was a successful Kickstarter that they're going to start having print copies of at their table now. Basically, it's a story that's written by Paul Kane with art by Pavel Kardis. I hope I said that right. And lettering by Nikki Fox Robot. And it's very much a one-shot. It's kind of like a Twilight Zone, sort of Outer Limits, sort of one sort of story about a disease, basically. A man who catches some kind of disease and how he deteriorates throughout the issue. It's very... it's not for the faint of heart. It's a little bit icky. Pavel's sort of artwork is very painterly. You know, there's definitely sort of a photo reference, as it were, in the nice way. I'm not saying, you know, it's someone...
Yep.
Yeah, it's literally sort of painted this sort of stuff. So it works brilliantly for this issue. The whole thing's really professionally put together. It's not pleasant what happens to this guy as it goes on. And the way the... it's fairly gruesome and it's a contagion that sort of spreads worldwide, but you're seeing it from a very personal perspective. And then it takes a little twist at the very end, which is very sort of Outer Limits, Twilight Zone-y, which completely I just thought, you know, brilliant. It was brilliant. What the disease actually is and what it's doing was just a nice little punctuation at the end. So I was very impressed by this. Hellbound do quite a lot of cons throughout the year. I know they're very much a horror based publisher.
They're
going to be I think at Melksham, and they're going to be at the Bristol Horror Con, and they do a lot of stuff around the country. They do a lot of conventions. So if you see this and you're not squeamish, certainly it's reminiscent of the Cronenberg sort of body horror. You know, like The Fly, you know, that's fairly icky, isn't it? Watching a human being just break down. But it's told in a very, very nice way. That's very sort of poignant at the end. It does a lot of things quite nicely, quite deftly, I think. I was very impressed with this.
They've got a lot of titles out, Vince.
Hellbound Media have a lot of different titles. I'm on their website at the moment. They've got like Mandy the Monster Hunter. They've got the... Shock Value series, which is a bunch of like horror sort of anthology tales. Now it goes from everything that's, you know, gruesome to funny. They had a series called Slaughterhouse Farm, which is very much a Texas Chainsaw Massacre tongue-in-cheek sort of series, which definitely isn't for everyone, but if you like that kind of thing, it'll be right up your street. They've got plenty of books. They're never short on stock whenever you see their tables, which is always cool. So if you're at a show and you see this, the cover's really striking as well. It's like very shadowy. This man, you can't see what's happening to him. He's all decked in shadow, and there's like hospital people behind him, all lit up. It's very effective. Almost looks like a movie poster. So if you see The Disease about, that sounds weird saying that. if you see The Disease about and you like that kind of thing, definitely go for it, because it's a very well-told story. So there you go, Dave. What about you? What would you like to recommend?
I did have a couple, but I think I'm just going to stick with one. Space Girl by DC and Marvel artist Travis Sharris, I think his name's pronounced.
Oh, yes, yeah.
The reason I'm mentioning him is because he's, for the last couple of years, I think it's about the last 6 or 7 years, he's put out his own independent character called Space Girl. And anyone that's seen Travis's art is absolutely beautiful. He uses all sorts of media as well. You know, he doesn't just do pen and ink. He'll put mixed colour and paint with his work.
I
sometime.
Always remember when he did Wildcats for Wildstar back in the course. Day, and it was it was other level stuff. You know what he was doing.
Yeah. The funny thing is, it's like even though he's working for North American companies, his work looks so European as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, obviously coming from Canada, or Canada even. get me. Space Girl, as it sounds, it's a sci-fi action adventure about the adventures of Cadet Beta, otherwise known as Space Girl. And each panel is based on the newspaper, you know, the traditional newspaper strip format. And he's been, for the last couple of years, he's been publishing it. Whenever he gets time to do a panel, he'll publish it online for free. There are 84 panels so far, and he's already published volume one, which is about 68 panels. And it's actually in a little book, which is actually the shape of a newspaper strip panel. I've got the link for the website here, which I'll give to Vince later on, but you can just go and visit it and read all the story from panel one all the way up to panel 84, and it's absolutely brilliant.
I can see it now. I can see what you mean about the newspaper strip sort of format. Works really, really well.
Well, the actual book you can buy off. I mean, I got mine off of Amazon, and I'm sure there are other places you can buy it off of as well. It's in French. It's actually being published in French, but seeing as you can read, if you don't read French, you can read it online. It doesn't matter because it's just absolutely wonderful to own this artwork, and it's such a lovely little book. I mean, it's just nice to have on your coffee table for a start, and anybody that comes round can just read it. You know, or if you can't read French, look at the pictures, but it's all online and it's well worth a visit to have a look.
Amazing. Nice. I'm definitely going to be checking this out. That looks really, really brilliant. And I've actually wondered where he went. Do you know what I mean? Because he's not front and centre on your Marvel books anywhere, is he? So,
with guys like that, I always presume they've gone to work in Europe. You know, he's got such a sort of style that would fit in a European album as well, you know?
Yeah. Or very much they work in concept art now. Do you know what I mean? They work or storyboarding, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Which this sort of strip does have that storyboarding kind of feel as well. Very sort of cinematic. Yeah.
Oh, I think one of the reasons I was drawn towards it as well is I used to be a big fan of Philippe Drouillet, who used to work for Metal. And I always remember when I was young, Dragon Dream brought out Lone Sloan. And Greg Meldrum, who I worked with on Martillo, he's the scriptwriter, was always was mentioning that he was a fan of it as well. But I just find, you know, that whenever I see this sort of European artwork, it takes me back to Philippe Drouillet, Lone Sloan, and Jaeger, and just absolutely wonderful stuff. Absolutely wonderful.
Amazing. Nice. This nice whole one. Episode has been full of wonderful stuff. I think we can all agree.
Yeah.
I agree. It's been an absolute pleasure having you with us, Dave.
Yeah, definitely, mate. Yeah. Yes, yeah. It's been good to talk 2000 AD as well. We don't talk about it enough sometimes, I think.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, anyone who knows me is probably absolutely sick and tired of me talking about 2000 AD. So it's actually find a new audience, especially interested in listening to it. But,
there's certainly a lot of titles, be it 2000 AD and beyond, that I think a lot of people are going to be checking out now. As well, they should. I mean, especially like Zarjazz and like Dog Breath. I mean, I've been blissfully ignorant for the whole sort of fanzine sort of movement. But I've been lucky enough to check this stuff out that we've spoken about, and it's brilliant stuff.
Well, I would say, just in saying before the end, is if people really like the Metal Hurlant sort of French type stories, sci-fi fantasy stories, and you want to check out a 2000 AD related story, check out Shikara. I can't remember the name of the writer, so apologies to the writer, but Henry Flint is doing the artwork for Shikara, and it's absolutely incredible. It's one of my favourite things that's ever come out of 2000 AD. I've read the whole thing, and I couldn't even begin to try and explain what's going on in it, other than that it's just incredible. If you want a space fantasy with absolutely incredible artwork in it, by Henry Flint, Shikara, and I apologise to the writer, but I can't remember the name of the writer at the moment. So.
Nice.
Well, there you go. If you want a space fantasy you can check that out. And if you want to email us with your erotic fanfic of Tony Esmond, there's several different ways you can do it. I am the Segway King. Yes, let us know what you think of it about this episode. If you checked out any of the books, etc., there's several different ways you can do it. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Any events or comics or anything that you want us to know about, then just get in touch with us, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. either one of those emails. Like, if small press day, let us know how that went for you. And we'll give it a shout on the next show, because we're a small press show, you know. I say it on the intro every bloody week, so we want to know how you guys do on the day. Please let us know and we'll talk about it. You can follow us on Twitter at The Awesome Pod. As always, we'll be releasing who the next guest is, and certain Twitter polls that will occasionally get mentioned.
Bullshit.
What do you mean, bullshit, Dan? What do you mean?
It's a bigger upset than Brexit.
Let's face it,
the nation is stunned.
Right, are they? Yeah.
No, I think you'll find, Dan, you should lose graciously, my friend.
Never.
I think by losing a vote in this country, you kind of know that you're on the winning side.
Yeah. Tony says it all.
Do you know what, Tony? Tony, in this case, fuck off. You don't know what you're talking about.
What do you mean in this case? In every fucking case.
Thank you.
Do you want to tell people about the poll?
Yes.
Yeah.
In case they weren't aware.
For those who missed out last week's episode, Dan Butcher made the most shocking comment of 2016. He said that She-Ra's theme tune. Yeah, it's true. The theme tune to She-Ra was better than He-Man's.
It's true.
It's not true. It's your opinion.
In isolation, not saying the rest of the cartoon was better or anything else. Just the theme song was better.
Right. And on last week's episode, if you catch the outtakes, I actually put both intros on there, so you can judge for yourself. So I actually put one of the first ever polls for the Awesome Comics Pod onto Twitter, and I said, help us settle this once and for all, who had the best intro theme. And who won, Dan?
Yeah, you did. He-Man won.
It wasn't me that won. It wasn't me that won. It wasn't you versus me, Dan. It was good taste. Good taste won.
He's such a smug fucker.
With 66 votes, He-Man won. I must say this, it wasn't cut and dry. You know, She-Ra got 27%.
I voted for She-Ra. Yeah. Just to wind you up.
We had a few lovely comments as well. One of the best ones was Dave Kennedy said, I'm going to save up my money and open a shop just so I can tell the people voting for She-Ra to get out of my shop. Oh, thank you, Dave. That made my day. So, yes, who knows? I may do a poll this week. Who knows?
I hope you do.
Yes. So that will be on the Twitter at The Awesome Pod. You can get in touch with us on the Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. We're always posting on there. Each one of us does a cheeky little post sometimes.
Tony would
just pop out from nowhere and just post something. Dan will pop out. On Facebook. thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, please leave a review, because that helps get the word out.
And
we really need it, because we're desperate. No. And thank you if you listen to us on Stitcher, and thank you if you checked us out on the Podnose Network. We're now part of... We get everywhere, like SARS.
Or herpes.
Not quite as pleasant.
Audio herpes, that's what we are. We are everywhere, and we're also on the podnose.com network, so thank you very much for that. So where can anyone catch us online, Tony?
Ezohyz is what I am on Twitter, and I've got a few things going up or down the tubes this week, so please have a look over there.
Yeah, always good, and he's coming back in force. Dan?
I'm on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and Vanguard Comic obviously is updating again. I do this thing twice a week now. When I post an update, if you retweet the update tweet, it will have the Vanguard retweet reward hashtag on it. Each week you're in a chance of getting a sketch commission. And if you're a patron of the comic, you can get a full coloured one. So,
cool.
And you're entered into that automatically if you're a patron every week. So.
Dan Butcher is just slapping you with value for money right in your face.
Oh, fucking hell. You watch too much pornography, my friend. Let's hear that now.
I just listen to you every week. It's tainted my mind. That's what it is. I was such an innocent youth before I started this.
Yeah, before you started getting slapped in the face.
You're the one that's making it dirty. and you should definitely check out Vanguard Comic anyway, because the new issues are brilliant. So there you go. If you want to follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. If you want to know more about my comic The Red Mask from Mars, you can go from theredmaskfrommars.com.
And I have to say, I saw a little. Me and Dan have seen a little little sneak peek into issue 3, and it is by far the best so far, mate.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Very, very good. Yeah,
better and better as it goes on.
The last page had me fucking giggling, I have to say.
Was it unexpected?
It was, yeah. Yeah, it was good.
Good, yes. It's one of those things, and I'm sure a lot of people will know about this, an issue's been a long time in the making, and you're just eager to get it done and dusted. And
you're almost there, it's almost finished, mate.
Yeah, it's pretty much done, but I can't see the wood for the trees, do you know what I mean? But when I started the issue, and you get really confident about it, and you think, this is amazing, I'm really pushing it, by now I'm like, is it any good? Will anyone like this? Do you know what I mean? I'm in that sort of zone at the moment.
Yeah, someone was saying if you get to the past the 13-page hump, that's usually... Pardon? When you break the back of it. I think it was Eric Larson was saying it, but obviously that's just pencils.
I'm
saying, after I've been working 3 months on, say, an issue of Shaman Kane, I have to start showing it to other people and asking them, you know, like, does it do what I want it to do? Is it saying what I want it to say? So,
yeah.
But
we all have the same woes.
Yeah, we do. We're all, like, really fragile flowers, aren't we? But
especially snowflakes.
Jesus. David, where can people find you online?
Email is dbroughton@hotmail.co.uk. Blog dbroughton.blogspot.co.uk. I'm on Facebook, and Twitter is at dbroughton David.
There you go.
Cool.
Bang on. Another one in the can. We're heading towards those lofty heights of the 60s. So, Tony hit his 60s a couple of weeks ago, but we won't go into that.
Catching up with my age.
Yeah. Anyway, hope you've enjoyed this week's show, folks. Hope it's helped your Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever you listened, a brighter, more wonderful day. Thanks for listening, and from David, Dan, Tony, and myself, have a brilliant week. Stay safe, no matter what you're doing, and as always, stay awesome. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
Fucking hell, I was just rambling at the end. I did not know what the fuck I was saying.
You're like a classy BBC One news presenter sometimes.
Really?
I see you reading the news. And now over to Vincenzo Hunt, who's going to read the weather out.
It's definitely getting slicker week on week, segues.
I feel more like a sort of BBC War reporter than a presenter.
Up on the rooftops.
Tony's going to say something, batten down the hatches, here he goes.